I call the work session of the Vanna County Board of Supervisors to order. We will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence. Please stand and face the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. All righty. Our work session today is going to cover the constitutional officers.
We forgot to table, so the constitutional officers are in the cheap seats right now, sorry. But we'll bring them up to the podium. And then it'll just be really a dialogue, because this is meant to be a work session where you can ask questions back and forth. Several do have some presentations. I've got their budget sheets linked, so we can pull those up at any time. But there weren't a lot of changes on those budgets. But we'll start out with Mrs. Lenher. Or whatever you want to start with.
The number to the left is our binder.
Yes, it's on the agenda. Number 13 is the treasurer's tab.
See there on the ball there.
Yes, sir. They were making life easy on us. That's always a good thing. Miss Lenhurst, so lovely to see you today, dear.
Thank you. Yes. Board members, I really don't have a whole lot of presentation today. I presented a budget to the county administrator. The county administrator has presented and given you his numbers. And that's about all I have to say. What I requested is what I felt like I needed. I'm very lean in my office with everything that we have going on. I just felt like, you know, the numbers that I presented was what I needed. And then we met with Mr. Nichols and we came up with what he proposed. Questions?
Any special concerns?
The postage was dropped down, but there again,
you never know.
We never know.
No. Whatever it is, is.
It is.
If it's too much, you can come back.
Right.
See us.
Right.
It was actually because the postage was dropped down because it was counted in two different lines. And so we just tried to consolidate it to make sure it was on the correct line. So when we went back and forth through it. But historically, as far as the postage dollars, I think those dollars are still there, plus the change for numbers of mailings.
Yeah,
but I think it was included in two lines.
Anyone else? Well, by golly, I'm loving this. You got to put the pressure on the next four.
Steve,
ma'am?
So her budget is at, she requested, 472,594.
474. On the screen, ma'am, 474,297.
Uh-huh.
And the recommendation is 457,717.
Uh-huh.
And
so where is the...
The part of it's in professional services at the top. If you look at the difference between the blue column and the red column, or the blue, red, and the county administrator's column, so in this case, she had requested baseline of 10, baseline plus of 12.6.
Okay.
And the recommendation was the 10, the baseline.
Okay. So
that's for contract services.
So that's 22,600 Okay. Was that?
$200 on the printing and binding.
And 200 from 12.6 to 12.4.
DMV online.
Okay.
It's 200.
$10,000 on the... Postal services.
Okay, I see.
And about $750 on telecommunications. And again, the numbers are largely based on historical spending.
Mm-hmm.
But the postal one specifically, the numbers originally we categorized. It went back through and looked at old expenses. They just happened to be categorized in two different lines. If you look to the
printing and binding.
On the printing and binding up here, you can see where some of the dollars were up in here and some of the dollars were down in here. Let's see, open these two. And then we actually pulled up and looked at the old bills, the actual bills for the last year, and it was just It was just, it's just counted in two different areas.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how does the $2,600 in the very top there affect the work that you all have described in business data in Richburg? How does that affect you?
Mrs. Booker, we're trying to get away more from business data.
Okay.
But with Venus right now, I can't even get out of the delinquent letter to the people that owe delinquent real estate and personal property because the information coming over from Eunice is incorrect. So we're trying to work that out with Mr. Headley being in the middle and, you know, I'm the treasurer that cares if your delinquencies are correct or if your bill is correct. So that little bit of extra time is necessary to make sure that what goes out of my department is correct. We found out we were about where we thought we should be, but on the delinquencies, it was not pulling part of 2015. It wasn't pulling a lot of the real estate from the previous years. So air conversion from one system to the other still has some problems.
Okay, so that's not resolved yet.
No, ma'am. It is not resolved yet.
Mm-hmm.
Linda, last budget year, we talked about you having to bring in some people to assist you.
Yes.
And we talked about you would try to eliminate that this year.
Right.
And you had,
Mr. Weaver, that's where I was. I thought we were on the right road, but when you go back and check the information that's going to go out, I've got information right now sitting at a printer that cannot be printed because it is not correct. You may owe the county $2,500, but that delinquent bill is only showing you owe $1,500. My figures that I send out have to be 100% correct, and you all rely on those delinquent taxes in this budget to balance this budget.
Right, but then you're getting straightened up sort of this year?
Yes, that is, and Mr. Sheridan, I think, will tell you that we still have some issues.
But you think then the next year you'll be straight and you won't need it?
See, we're dealing with a company out of Maine. Our servers that our data is on is in Maine. It is not here in Fluvanna. It is in Maine. So we're on the phone with support with someone in Maine, not Andy or Candace right now, because Munis is a total different system than what we had.
So then this next year we'll get down to zero on that.
We're hoping.
Figure. Okay. If
we can see that the information we are giving to the citizens of Fluvanna County is correct.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
And we cut back $5,500. So we've cut back a third.
Yes.
So hopefully.
And we only
that was on some other stuff, sort of transferred it to another. Spots.
No, sir, on the professional services.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just on the professional, because we gave $15,500 last year, or this year.
I don't know.
Okay. At 16, we went from $15,500, we dropped back to 10. So.
But this wasn't what we're...
Right, wasn't what we're discussing.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Next will be the Sheriff's Budget Briefing. Sheriff Hess, 25 and 26.
Liquor here.
Yeah, right inside. Right in.
Afternoon, everyone. Here today to present our FY17 budget. Our mission statement for the Fluvanna Sheriff's Office is to provide effective and efficient law enforcement, serve and protect the citizens and visitors of Fluvanna County, and to keep the community of Fluvanna County safe. Budgetary needs. This year we're doing a little different. We're not telling you everything we've done for the year, but we're here to explain to you what we need and what areas we need them in. And the areas this year we're focusing on is public safety software, which is we'll talk about law enforcement training, investigative and analysis software, vehicles and personnel. The new public safety software program as part of the CAD system that we've talked to you about in the past. Documentation tracking all the reporting solutions for law enforcement, fire, EMS. The records management is an important piece to that, something that we have to work very hard at right now to get information out of the current system that we have. Law enforcement training, this is training that's up and above what we pay to participate in the local academy. These are specialized schools that we send people to that are not taught at our original academy, and some of them are very expensive, like Lieutenant Wells went to the FBI Academy last year. This year we've lost our last Forensic Science Academy graduate who went back to dispatch, so next year I'll be coming to you. That's going to be a hefty one, but we do need a person with those type of skills in the investigations division. So these are just a sample of some of the schools that we would like to be able to send folks to get specialized training. Investigative and analysis software, leads online investigative software. What's happening in the world of software is there's data collection going on constantly from every source of the internet you can think of. What we have to do is to be able to purchase, to be able to be a member of the being able to obtain some of that data. A good example of that was a couple weeks ago when we had the missing child. We had one of our local FBI agents came in and sat down, and we actually set up a little space for him in dispatch, and he was able to get in and go to software and get information that we never would have been able to find. We probably can't afford that type of stuff, but the basics is where we're looking at to get started. Aging vehicle fleet. We've talked about vehicles every year. You can see the 1X out in 18. That's actually the investigative vehicle that you've just given us earlier this year. Is taking the place of that one. In FY18, we would have come to you and said, you know, because of the reduction in vehicles due to their mileage and stuff, we would have needed that extra vehicle. And I can tell you that the vehicles that we have, there are a couple of spare vehicles to use when one's in the shop, but if we had a major vehicle went down for something serious and we weren't able to repair it, we would have to come back to you because we just don't have a lot of vehicles just sitting around. Our staffing, this gives you an idea of how we're staffed at the sheriff's office. We've just had one addition of another part-time deputy. Communications, we've been here with you in the past talking about the needs for communications. With this addition this next year in FY17 would be the last of the three that we've been talking about in the past. What this would do is give us the exact coverage from shift to shift. We'd have three dispatchers on 7 a.m., 7 p.m., and then three from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., plus we would have a supervisor that would overlap from noon to midnight, or wherever that call volume, say we got a snowstorm coming, you'd alter some of your staffing levels. But it makes it even, and that way when you got somebody out sick, you got somebody in training, you got something else, and you're down to two people, you're not calling somebody in. It helps out a great deal. But I think of all the numbers that have been thrown out to you in the past, this right here we feel like will work.
Is that a need for three communications?
No, this
three
is the last. Remember,
oh,
you've
last
given us two.
Three.
This is the last of the
great.
Three that we requested.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am. Personnel needs. We've originally put in for a deputy / IT person. But when we got into the trying to research and how all that would work, if we were a larger department, that probably would be exactly the way to go. So instead of going that way, we've just gone with asking for that additional deputy that we need in the patrol division. Here are some other things we've uncovered during our search and our presentation for you. While we went through, we started realizing that there were areas like on the right-hand side there, Currently, we have five deputies that have been here from 3 to 5 years that make less money than someone that could walk in right now that was certified. And I think that that's kind of in a compression area that we need to get these deputies up to where we need to be. We'll do a presentation for you at the next board meeting and fill you in exactly of what we think and where we need to go with this. On the left-hand side, we're looking to compete with all the other agencies around us. What we're asking for here is a sign-on bonus of $3,000, and that would be for someone who has experience and is certified. And why we ask for that, when you look at the bottom there, between the salary during their training, their uniforms, the vehicle use, the fuel, the meals that we have to pay while they're in school, that comes to about $24,000. So if we can attract people that are certified, that would be somewhat of a savings to the county in the long run. In addition to this, it's not on here, is a contract. We're coming up with a 3-year contract. Should we bring someone in, they would sign a 3-year contract, and if they left before that 3 years, they would pay us that money back. And that would be pending approval as it goes to the county attorney's office to have them proofread it. But you'll get more on this at the next board meeting. And I do apologize that I won't be here, so Captain Hill will be presenting those two things to you. I'm taking a little vacation and just happened to fall on that. So I'll be thinking about y'all from sunny Daytona, Florida.
From Hawaii, I guess.
Our volunteers, we started the program last year, and it has really evolved. Andrea and her crew has done an outstanding job of making this happen. The VIPS activities include search and rescue, courts, communications, investigations, and such. VIPS total cost savings so far, keep in mind that we didn't get this program started until January of 15, and up to now we've saved the county about $53,738, and most of that are the product of two gentlemen who've been working the front of the courts here and saving us a deputy's position basically while we've been down. If we hadn't had them, our overtime budget would be significantly up, Mr. Weaver, yes. Due to the fact of having to have other people cover. So.
Good for you.
Yes, sir. And I think next year you'll see this number will probably even grow exponentially. We've added some other things for the office and the community. This year we did a drug drop box. We've added the sheriff's mountain bike patrol, and the mountain bikes were purchased from asset forfeiture money. And the reserve deputy program and the triad program. So far this year, 132 pounds. Not this year, I'm sorry, we put that in May?
Yeah, actually in
July. Since July, 132 pounds of prescription over-the-counter drugs. And these are drugs that possibly some child could go into their grandparents or even a visiting child to someone's home. And when you look through some of these plastic containers and you see the types of drugs that are in there, that's a blessing right there to have that. And sometimes on the weekend, first thing on Monday, that thing is to capacity. Here's a shot of a couple of the guys on the mountain bikes. Deputy Green on the left is currently deployed somewhere in the Middle East. But we really got a lot of good feedback from the deputies riding through neighborhoods, as well as around Pleasant Grove during the sporting events. And if you go out there on a Saturday during soccer season and baseball, there are a lot of people coming and going, and they can really get around on those bikes. Basically what they do is they have a carrier on the back of the car, and they put their bike on that, and they kind of drive in the middle. And that way, if they need to get to their car, they're only halfway. But it's a great program, and it's also an asset to them as far as staying fit. Our reserve deputy program. Here's a shot from when we had our graduation. They are very close to finishing their field training portion. Of course, our triad program this year, triad has really started to blossom. We've had several meetings with some stellar turnout. Matter of fact, the triad coordinator from Alamar County came and said, wow, we've never had this many people at a meeting. They had some training the other day for car fits. There are several programs that Triad will be putting on here in the community for our seniors, and this is basically a senior safety program. And here's just a breakdown we were given of some of the counties surrounding us and some of the size budgets that they have and all. We got to do a little more research to determine what all is included in those budgets, and we'll get back to you here in the future to show you the breakdown as we compare to others around us. Any questions?
Any questions?
No.
Thank you so very much. Do appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Next will be the Commonwealth Attorney's budget brief. Mr. Hazel.
Don't have a presentation because not asking for anything this year, other than what's in the budget. Actually, it's a little bit less than last year. We had put in, I think, $7,500 in case we moved, and we didn't move, so that was taken back out of our office supply line, which is fine. That's as it should have been. Just really want to thank you for what you did for me last year, adding the paralegal position. We've had some big cases come up already and some that are coming up, and to have that extra person that we've needed for a while on board has been very helpful. I think we've always had an understanding, if I don't need something, I don't ask for it, but when I do need something, I come to you, and I haven't been turned down yet. So I'm here just to say thank you, and we're going to continue doing what we can with what we have. Again, thank you for your support in the past. Right now, we're using drug asset forfeiture money that we can to fill some of the holes without coming to you to ask today. I just ordered a display screen for the courtroom to replace our projector and that system that had worked for a while, but we're going to have state-of-the-art this year's model 60-inch display screen here for jury trials and for other trials for that matter. We have to stay ahead of what defense attorneys are doing, and we have to live up to what juries expect nowadays. You can't come in and pass 3x5 or 4x6 photos around like we used to at the old courthouse. When people come here, they expect you to be on top of things, and that's what we're doing. And again, thank you for your support. If I can add one thing, I would like to ask you to do whatever you can for your employees this year. I know every year is a tight year in Fluvanna, but the federal government and the state governments appear to be doing a little bit better, and I think some of that's trickling down to Fluvanna, but you've done well with raises in the past and bonuses and things, and I see it every Sunday morning at Food Line, and it was confirmed today in the newspaper. Food prices are going through the roof. I know gas prices are down, but the cost of living is going up, and whatever you can do for your employees this year, I'd urge you to try to do that, okay? Thanks.
With your new help that you have, has that helped you with not having to work on weekends?
It has helped quite a bit, actually. Actually, a lot of the work.
I remember you saying that last year.
Well, a lot of the work that I do is self-imposed on the weekends. But as far as being able to do pick up a lot of the work, what Rachel's position, Rachel Cazella is her name, what she's done mostly is Sherry Stater is our victim witness coordinator. Mm-hmm. And what that's allowed Sherry to do is focus much more on her victim witness coordinator. Rachel is doing the paralegal things, mm-hmm. And Sherry is gradually handing over a lot of the paperwork to Rachel. As far as me working on the weekends, I've got a grand jury Monday. I'll be looking over those files this weekend, even though I looked over them today, and I'm going to look over them Friday. I'm just neurotic that way. I'm never going to come to court without having looked at something.
He was the same way as a student, studying all the time.
You're not under oath, are you, Mr. Chairman? In any event, thank you for asking. But no, right. a lot of what goes on the weekends are briefs and things that I have to do myself. But Rachel has taken so much off of Sherry's plate, and even our administrative assistant, Sarah. The three of them are able to really be a lot more efficient than we were in the past. And it's helping for victims. We've had victims, come in and recently and personally thank Sherry in our office for how much we're able to reach out to them. And Sherry did that before, but now she can focus almost solely on that, which is very important. And I'm as long as I'm doing this, I'm going to be carrying something home with me. I just just weird that way.
Right.
Mr.
Hastings, yes, ma'am.
How many people work in your department?
We have five. Myself, my assistant, Frank Terwilliger, Rachel, who I mentioned is the paralegal, Sherry, our victim witness coordinator, and my administrative assistant is Sarah. And they all work, and we've been there. Between Frank and Sherry and I, we've got we're probably pushing 70 years of experience, and the other two are a little newer, but they both came from criminal justice jobs. One was a juvenile probation officer, and the other was an adult probation officer. So we're very well staffed right now, and happy to have them. It's very thankful. We are going to probably talk to Steve about this, and I think I think there's a contingency line for personnel. Frank will be, if his plans hold up, and for his sake, I hope they do. For our sake, I hope he changes his mind. But he's planning on leaving at the end of the year, so I'm going to be bringing someone on, obviously, to replace him, and I'd like to bring them on a little bit earlier. So I'll be hiring somebody very experienced and very ready to go, but just to, you know, shadow us for a couple of weeks to just see how we do it here. So just that type of thing. But I understand that type of a contingency is not something that's too big of an ask. So if that comes up, I'll be back to you to talk about that. But any other questions?
The other thing, mm-hmm. I was in the courtroom in Buckingham a couple of weeks ago. Their prisoners are satellited. Now, I don't know whether they came from Albemarle or Charlottesville. I don't know if they came from Orange or not. But they do not bring their prisoners into the courthouse. They have a satellite. The judge speaks to them on satellite. And I was wondering if that's more cost efficient or...
To answer your question, I think the sheriff may be better to address that, but I can say certainly yes, it is. And I think Central Virginia Regional Jail is one of the few jails that I've seen that don't do that on a regular basis. And I don't mean to point a finger at them. The sheriff can correct me if I'm wrong. He's on the board, I'm sure. But I'm a special prosecutor in a lot of different jurisdictions, mm-hmm. Cumberland and Albemarle and other places. And it is very common to have a TV screen beside the judge. And it's done that way.
Down here, and we bring three or four, and it's
carloads at a time down here.
And they all have to sit back there all day long. Yeah. We have to feed them. And then so I just thought we were...
We had the sheriff mentioned the missing child, the Amber Alert case. That individual has had two satellite bond hearings in front of our court because he's in a different jail. Again, I don't know what it would take to do that. That would be somebody else's bailiwick as far as how that would happen. But I'd be all for it. I think the sheriff's office probably would be too. They spend a lot of time toting these folks back and forth.
With the new leadership at CVRJ, I think you'll get a much warmer welcome, and the sheriff can bring it up as when the jail authority meets. But everything has gotten a lot better, and communication's working, and a lot of things are helping. So maybe if it's what the sheriff wants to do, he's on the authority. So
yeah, we've talked about that before, and the technology I believe is in the building, but we also have to get our court and our judge on board because it's kind of their thing.
Right.
So, but it, like Jeff will tell you, for certain things, first parents and maybe a couple other things that you can do that, but other times they physically have to be here. So it's a roll of dice. But Ms. Booker, most of the time our jail does deliver it, but that would help save on costs on their end too. But we do go to the surrounding jails should we have to pick somebody up and bring them in. And anytime you don't have to bring somebody, it's definitely a cost saving. And like Mr. Nichols said, with the new building, once they get in and get that situated, maybe they can find room where they can set something like that up, similar to what we do with the magistrate.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next will be the Commissioner of Revenue Budget Brief. The word brief was in there now.
It's not going to work. Good
you try. Can gavel him, though.
Yeah, gavel. Thank you for allowing me to have a few moments to speak. I have a very short presentation, and I'll try to cover it. And answer any questions you might have. Anyway, I appreciate one bottle of water from Mr. O'Brien. I was a little dry and dealing with sinus, so I swiped one from you. But anyhow, this is the staff that we have in my office. I'm very pleased to tell you that I think we have one new hire. She just was recently brought on board, but... graduated from Fluvanna in 2005, but I'm very pleased with our staff, and I'm hopeful that I'll be able to keep them for a really long time. The second slide, I just speak very briefly to the five different areas of revenue that we assist the county in trying to generate. Y'all know what they are, so I won't belabor any of them. Real estate, personal property,
public service corporation taxes. There's a pretty big bump in that one this year. Y'all aware of that, primarily because of the upgrade from coal-fired to natural gas at VEPCO, and the transmission line that went through Mr. Weaver's area up there, the new transmission line. They have another one that's planned for a little later this year in the county, so maybe we'll get another bump, a little smaller bump, but that helped a bunch this year. PPTRA, y'all aware of that, car tax relief. It's a fixed figure, hadn't changed, you know, $2,996,000 and some odd that we get as a fixed. It would go down. It can't go up, but it could go down if the number of vehicles that we have were to decline. That's not the case. Our population is not declining, but it is capped. It won't go above that number unless act of the General Assembly. And then lastly, the personal property decal fees. We've been managing that for a pretty long time. Just a few new initiatives. Some of the things we've been doing for a long time, but we're trying to do them hopefully more efficiently. Digital land use. Have digitized all the files. Y'all know that. With y'all's help, we were able to do that. One of the things that is new that I did want to point out was that we're allowing our applicants to do it, if they choose to, electronically. It's a choice that they can make when we send out the forms. We have traditionally sent them out in the regular mail. It's an annual recertification, and we receive them back by mail. That process does work. It just has an expense associated with it. And what we're finding is about 25, maybe 30% of the people are taking the option of having us send it to them electronically, email, if you would. And they can then complete it and send it back by email.
Just and it's a cost to the applicant. You say it's a low cost?
At no cost, because they don't have to mail it back, and we don't pay them if they choose to. I'm not proposing at this point and for a while yet that we do that across the board, but at some point, because not everyone is comfortable with email, but many people are now, and we were pretty surprised how many jumped on board to actually receive and file their annual app electronically. Digital tax relief, we are in the process of converting all of those files to a digital file. We haven't done that. You know, you're talking about 5 decades, basically, of files. But we've made we're doing it in-house and with the scanner that y'all were kind enough to let us get last year, which we use for land use. We're now using for the digital, tax relief files. But I hope by the middle to end of this summer, we'll have that completed. And we will have all those files available in digital format on our library file. So well backed up, no issues with that at all. So we're very comfortable with that. We are also allowing our applicants to consider electronic filing for the elderly and disabled, as well as for disabled veterans. And veterans is nowhere near as large a program, but it is growing. And it has a fairly significant impact, because with veterans, it's a yes or no. It's not income-based. It's not asset-based, which tax relief for the elderly is based on both of those two categories. Veterans is you are or you are not at the threshold, 100% threshold. If you are, you get the tax relief. And that has a pretty significant impact, because that relief is retroactive to when they qualify, but not earlier than January 1st of 2011. So if I have a veteran that may have been living in the county that is in fact 100% disabled, wasn't aware of the program, or hadn't applied for whatever reason, let's say it's an old Navy captain that got out, you know, and had a little loss of hearing, you know, maybe some PTSD from dealing with a lot of disgruntled hospital patients. If they file, they get the relief, just as an example, and certainly not intended.
I'm only 60%.
That relief is retroactive back to as early as January of 2011. So, again, it's a small program, and we're very happy to accommodate those veterans that qualify. And I'm only saying this, frankly, is just to kind of reinforce, as y'all see people in your district, you can help us get that word out. it also applies to the spouse of that particular veteran. If the veteran qualifies and the veteran passes away but the spouse remains in the county, that spouse continues to qualify for the rest of his or her life as long as they don't remarry. A little marriage penalty
yeah.
there. Yes, ma'am. So it's yeah, well, I'll leave it at that.
I was just getting ready to say, I want to know what the veteran's wives.
Yeah, the spouses qualify for the rest of their natural life as long as they don't remarry. I just tossed this in here, and I won't belabor it. For this year, this coming year, it's recommended that we have a little over $1,000 more than we've had. I only put that in there just to point out that we've had more, but we're operating with less. And maybe I think a lot of that's because as we move into the digital arena, we're able to do it. It's postage is not quite as much, you know, for one example. But that's just to give you a ballpark. Now, operating budget, and I wanted to qualify that. It is clearly less personnel cost. That doesn't include personnel, but we run the office. Absent personnel cost with, $35,000, $36,000. We can do it with that. I'm happy with that. I'm not asking for more. And I appreciate what you've been able to give us. I will jump to this page. I'm not going to belabor that. The only thing I would point out that you might have a question about, if I can, I can't get the little red thing to work.
Use that one.
Thank you, sir. Professional services. You know, is a little bit of a, that looks like 17,520, I can't quite read that. But that would be, if I was sitting in your position, you know, hey, well, what exactly is 17? I mean, obviously, when you're talking about $200 for postage or, you know, $400 for vehicle insurance, you know exactly what that is. The professional services, so I did do one slide that spoke to that $17,000. It really is not very much discretionary money. Vaminet, I think all of y'all, if you aren't familiar with Vaminet, that's used a great deal by all citizens. I won't belabor it. That's the annual cost for it. It's $3,600. That price hasn't gone up since we put Vaminet on the ground several years ago, actually back in about 1998 or 99, I believe. Stonewall Technologies, that's the software that we use, the annual cost to use the software that we have our real estate built around, $4,500. Blue Ridge, $1,500. That figure is put in there just to cover us when we ask them to come in for special assessments. If we have properties that's been rezoned or a business application, it's something that they may be more uniquely qualified for. They will come in. I don't know that we'll use all $1,500, but if we have a need, frankly, I hope we do. I hope we have enough business applications that we need their services. But NADA, that's what we pay the National Automobile Dealers Association to place value on all of our personal property, and that pushes up around about 40,000 pieces of property. $2,400 business data Virginia, that's down from where it may have been in the past. They come in and help us do really one thing right now. Ms. Linher spoke to it. I will speak to it also. We are still working with Munis to get our hands around how that overlays with their other software. That's the one thing that business data is helping us with. And for example, we just got the NADA value and they are overlaying that over our Munis software. There are some glitches, we're working through it. We certainly hope that we'll be able to take that responsibility on ourselves in the near future. It won't happen this year. We're having a few issues, but we're working through them. When they're complete, we then go in and touch an awful lot of those pieces of property to make adjustments to them. I won't belabor that. Vessel valuation, that's the same thing. That's who we pay to price any boat that we might have. Finally, we have to pay a fee to work with DG. The Department of Game and Inland Fisheries is who maintains a list of who has a boat inventory. It's not DMV. If you have a boat, you got probably two pieces of property, a boat and a trailer. The Department of Game and Inland Fisheries is the state agency that maintains the boat inventory, who owns what, you know, when you got it. But the trailer it may be sitting on, because that's a licensed vehicle, that is actually a DMV. So it's a two-part effort on a boat trailer. and then just a small amount for, so that's the $17,000. It is very little discretionary money in there. And I felt it would be appropriate maybe to break that out just to kind of give you all an idea of what's spent out of that category. I could go back to any other particular line item you might have, but that was all I planned to brief. I thank you for what you've given us. I think we use it, I believe, as a pretty good stewards, and I'd be happy to speak to anything else, but we'll make that work. I'd echo Mr. Hazel's comments. I'm always trying to work on as an advocate for our staff, but I will say it again publicly. Thank you for what you've done for our staff most recently, and I very much appreciate it. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
2 minutes, man. He promised.
Okay. It was 3.5, wasn't it?
He told me 5 minutes was 3 minutes more than you needed.
Yeah.
Next.
I'm not sure there's an opportunity.
The clerk of the Circuit Court budget brief.
Good afternoon.
Dan, I noticed the honey bun's up here, the right hand button on there.
Right hand, okay.
Welcome.
Thank you. As you all know, obviously, I'm new to office, so I've only been in office about a month and a half and working with a budget that was not submitted by me. So, you know, I'm here to ask that you approve the budget as it was submitted. I think that Mr. Peterson has done a good job in, you know, not requesting a lot in the past. He did add a little bit in this year, but I think that it's necessary. I don't plan to go on any length, but one of the main issues that I'm addressing and trying to look at now that I'm in office is one issue that we're facing is a lot. There have been not a lot of improvements made to the furniture and fixtures in this building since we moved in 2001, fall of 2001. And so I have inherited an office that has items that are breaking. You can look behind you and see all the chairs on the bench. None of them match because we've had to pull from this place or that place to add chairs to the bench because the other ones have broken. So I actually have two budgets, our clerk's office budget, and then we have the circuit court judge budget. And so we have added in, hopefully, money for the new chairs for not only the bench but for the judges' chambers as well. But as far as my office goes, you know, as we can see, this is the TV and audiovisual equipment that we use for our jury orientation. So as you can imagine, it's on the fritz at times, not working, pretty embarrassing. I'm not sure how many people still have these types of TVs, but it had a built-in VCR that no longer works, so we added a VCR. Now, that VCR doesn't work. We did get a DVD, thank goodness, and we're using a DVD now, but still using the old TV. So we need to update that. That's one thing that needs to be updated. This is our record room. As you can see, this space on the bottom right now, left-hand corner, is the only space we have left in that office as far as storage of our records. And that fills up quickly with our deed books. We do have plans to stop using the deed books, stop using the paper deed books. We will be going totally digital. However, there is a bill in the General Assembly right now that I'm kind of waiting on to make that decision because there are some concerns about backup and requiring of having paper documents, which is I'm hoping they don't approve. But that's part of the issue. Here's a couple other shots from the record room. Again, as you can see, the right-hand picture is most of our historic records as far as wills, old land books. I mean, obviously dating back to 1777. I mean, there's no space in that area for any more storage. This is the law library that we're required to keep. I have a lot of ideas as far as trying to add space. I mean, the record room is a very large room. As you can see from this angle, there are space. We can go up. That wall down at the far end, we could build bookshelves and move our law library down to that end. However, I don't have the money in my budget to do that if anything is cut. I have ideas, but I have to have the money in my budget in order to do that. This is our secured file room that's right back here behind the court room. It's almost full. It has a newer filing system in it, but the far right-hand picture is all the space we have left. Everything else, the left-hand picture you can see, it's full. And all of those racks are all full. So, and we have record retention schedules that we have to follow by the Library of Virginia. And so we've got to keep these records. And we just don't have the space. So that's pretty much it for my presentation. I mean, what Mr. Peterson asked for, I think the main item between what he asked for and what the county administrator is recommending, there is a $5,500 cut in our electronic data processing equipment. We've got two copiers. Our copier in our records room, as well as our copier that we use at our recording station, are over 10 years old. So as you can imagine, just like with any other technology, it quickly goes out of date. Our maintenance for those equipment is going up, and the parts for fixing that equipment is becoming hard for them to find. So we wanted to purchase new copiers. However, and that's why it was originally added in, Mr. Peterson thought we needed new copiers. However, I would ask that money be added back in from what the administrator has cut out. I may not buy copiers. However, I may ask to transfer that money into the furniture and fixtures line item so that I can get shelves built for the record room or some other, storage, or all of our probate room, which I didn't show you a picture of. All of the file cabinets are full, so we're having to shuffle those around. So I'm just working with a lot of things that need to be changed. I'm working with the records retention schedule to work on destruction of some records so we can make some room. But I've got a lot going on, so I just ask the board to not tie my hands and give me the opportunity to make some changes that need to be made. As far as our staff, we have had, when Mr. Peterson was on board, we had a staff of 8. We had one who was not reappointed, so we have a staff of 7 right now. I have not advertised that position because I'm trying to be responsible and evaluate what is needed in that office before I just hire that position. I want to look at what we need and who we need in that office before I just hire a position that, I don't really know if, one, we need them, two, what specific areas of the office that they need to work in. So I am trying to be very fiscally responsible in the money that has been given to us, and I just ask the board just to not tie my hands and give me an opportunity to make some changes.
Could you not use some of that money for that line 34 for your new furniture and shredding and replacement of copiers? Could you not use some of that?
What so, money? I'm sorry, what line?
The one that you have, you're short one employee now. That's all I'm saying is then you have some money left over because you have budgeted for a full-time employee.
And that is correct. I mean, if that is allowed, then certainly. I was kind of told that our staff figures don't get messed with much, so I was working more on the operational.
Yeah, formally out of the personnel lines, you have to request it because we have to be able to inform the board, but
okay.
It's possible.
Okay. So, but I mean, certainly that is a possibility.
One of the reasons we hit on here a little bit is because in anticipation of Ms. Trebek coming on board, we have to actually look at the buying copiers versus leasing copiers because we have some leasing agreements in effect right now. And they're relatively good prices. And then, in addition, she was going to she and her staff were going to work on checking some of the shredding things for $50 a month. We could take every document in the county practically and get it shredded on site because we have these bins now in our facilities. But it really depends on whether her records qualify for that or they have to be shredded immediately. But some of those things will be adjusted. But I do agree because of the storage issues, you've got to have some flexibility there. But that's a new ask on that. So,
Are you not planning to rehire?
I'm not saying that I'm not planning to rehire. I just don't know. I didn't want to jump in knowing I had a position and just advertise and hire when I hadn't had an opportunity to get in there and see what we needed.
That certainly makes sense.
And that's why. I mean, right now I'm just evaluating and taking the opportunity to work with the staff that I have. Discuss with them what they think my needs are, our needs are, and go from there.
Right. Now, what things do you put on digital records? You've got a lot of books and stuff. Those things will always be there, all your record books, all those places. You can't put them anywhere, right?
Right now, all of the records that are in the record room, as far as the deed books, are actually all now in digital form. Mr. Peterson did go through the years and
they're in digital.
They are digital.
But you can't.
But those books that are currently there will stay there.
Will stay.
But it's whether or not we continue to add to them or not. That was what we're dealing with. And we want to keep, I mean, really, historically, I mean, we want to keep those records because mm-hmm. those records do have, some of those do have original, the deed books have original right. plats and things right. in them. I mean, you wouldn't, certainly want to, wouldn't want to get rid of those.
Mm-hmm. So. Haven't those been copied also and put someplace else, those records?
Have they been?
Yes.
I mean, uh-huh. they are on, they're some of them are in the Library of Virginia archive, in the right. Library of Virginia. And then, of course, like I said, they are all digital now as well.
Yes.
They're on the computer.
Good.
But what we have, we're going to keep.
Sure.
It's just whether or not we add. So.
All righty. Anyone else? Thank you so much.
Thank
Wonderful
you.
Job.
Thank you.
And that's going to do it for our briefs now. Can we go to closed session without Mr. Payne here?
I guess we can if I can find it.
We can?
Yeah.
Mr. Weaver, it's all you, sir.
Well, just a second. Here you go. This is just a snapshot of your budget calendar going forward. And you haven't done any budget work, per se, yet, because it's been briefings up to now. And your briefings are now done. Sure. Other than when, you know, departments are at meetings, you want to ask questions about this function or that function, that will be ongoing through your meetings. But you don't have a budget work session on the 2nd. You just got your regular board meeting at 4 o'clock. Do you want to schedule a budget work session that evening at 7 after your 4 o'clock meeting so you can kind of dig into it and let us know what you want as far as additional information or who you want to get briefs from or whatever? Now, you do have the 9th, which is just tentatively scheduled for a budget work session, and you've got the afternoon of the 16th. But because February has been so chock full of just the presentations, this is kind of what your schedule looks like. So what's your druthers on that, please?
I'd rather do the budget work session on the 2nd and then on
go
the
ahead
9th.
And do it after the 4 o'clock meeting.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be good because at worst out of that, you may find that we need to come back to you with, you know, 7 different answers for 7 things. But then we can either have it for the following week or you can cancel the following week and do it on the 16th.
That's,
but it really depends on how far you get that night on answer
that's
questions.
That's not
and answers.
When we did it last year, wasn't it?
I think it was the 2nd or 3rd week when you actually did it. It was one of these 2 weeks.
Because okay. I remember after we came together, then we said no need to do that.
Yeah, and I think that let's maybe say that the meeting's going to get done, if the March 2nd is not terribly long, you may be able to go right from your regular meeting right to work session
sure.
and have dinner at the same time, you know, just have some sandwiches and things around there, but in the Morris room, so we've got it up on the screen and can go interactive.
Sounds like a good idea.
The point for us, though, is that you'll talk a lot that night, and we'll know what nuggets we need to come back to with to finish up.
You'll give a direction in which way to go.
Precisely.
All righty. So, Mr. Weaver.
Mr. Chair, I move that the Cubana County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711, 8.6, Section 2.2-3711, 8.7 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purpose of discussing real estate and legal matters.
Second.
We have a motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Against? Chair votes aye, 5-0. We will.
Wow.
Mr. Weaver.
Mr. Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Cleveland County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be it resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify that to the best of each member's knowledge, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711-A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and only such public business matters as were identified in the motion of which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting. A second and a recorded vote needed.
We have a motion by Mr. Weaver, second by Mr. O'Brien. Ms. Seeger.
Yes.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr.
Aye.
O'Brien? Chair votes aye. We have 5-0. Folks, I now call the regular meeting of the Cleveland County Board of Supervisors to order. We will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence. Please rise and take the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. With our first measure of business, we're going to have a special presentation, resolution honoring the town of Columbia and the town council members. Would the town council members please join us up in front?
We're all just going to get down to it.
What a happy family.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, and Mayor and Town Council, and President Town Council members, on behalf of the Board of Supervisors, County of Fluvanna, Palmyra, Virginia, Resolution Number 5-2016. Resolution recognizing the historic standing of the Town of Columbia and the dedication of Town Council members. At a regular meeting of the Board of Supervisors of Fluvanna County, held in the Fluvanna County Courts Building at 7 p.m. on Wednesday, February 17, 2016, in which the following members were present, the following resolution was adopted by a majority of all members of the Board of Supervisors. The vote will be recorded in the minutes of the meeting as shown below. Whereas this area of Fluvanna County, now known as Columbia, was thriving long before European exploration and was known as Rossarec by the Monica Nation. And whereas the town of Columbia was established by an act of the Virginia General Assembly on the 25th day of November in 1788. And whereas this town, at its incorporation, is home to white settlers and free people of color, as well as those who were still enslaved. And whereas the town sits near the confluence of the James River and the Ravanna River, the town was an important port during its early years of incorporation. And whereas the Point of Cork Arsenal, the only post-revolutionary arsenal in Virginia, was instrumental in the security of the Commonwealth when it housed the state arsenal until 1801. And whereas the town is the home of the shrine of St. Catherine Drexel, a Catholic saint who during her life was dedicated to helping those of African-American and Native American ancestry. And whereas the same confluence of rivers as a result of flooding of the James River did initiate the decline of this venerable town. And whereas the people of Columbia, with thoughtful discernment and democratic process, did vote on the 17th of March 2015 to repeal the town charter. Now therefore be it resolved that the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors does hereby recognize on this day of the importance of the town of Columbia and its rightful place in the history of Fluvanna County. Be it further resolved that the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors also honors the leadership, commitment, and dedication of the most recent mayor and the town council members of Columbia and their many predecessors who over more than 200 years served the citizens of the town of Columbia well and faithfully. The foregoing resolution was duly and regularly adopted at this board meeting.
Thank Ms. Harris for drafting this resolution on behalf of the county.
Mayor Hannon, did you have anything you'd like to say?
I just want to thank everyone that's not here, that's involved with the town for their dedication to the town, the folks that were on the council most recently for all their work planning and trying to get town back up on its feet. This turned out to be the right decision. It was a sad decision. Also like to thank the folks that took part in the vote. We have two people that just walked in, two current council members. I'd also like to recognize Kurt, who was the mayor, helped I know your term was, you go ahead and tell us. It was
76 to 96.
96, wow. Long serving mayor.
You were grappling.
Liz Lane, who was the mayor of previous, she was the first and only mayor of the town of Columbia.
That's why I voted.
That was during the big one.
This is, of course, Lauren Carey, who's on council, and Ben and Kathy Saunders, who are on council. So, thanks to all of you and for everyone who was there. Thank you.
I know it.
Thank you very much, everyone. And now we're going to move to the adoption of the agenda.
So,
go ahead.
One note, I'd like to defer the February 3rd minutes. We'll put those on your next meeting.
Okay.
So that's on your consent agenda.
Oh, okay. I move that we adopt the agenda and defer the February 3rd minutes on the consent agenda.
Second. Motion so made and seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. Next, we move on to the county administrator's report.
I have nothing tonight, Mr.
Mel talked less than 20 minutes in the county administrator.
I'm trying to be under his record, so.
Yeah. All righty.
Virginia's not even playing basketball.
The board of supervisors. Baseball season's getting ready to start.
Monday night.
Board of Supervisors updates. Anybody have anything to add?
No.
I attended the Interagency Council last week, and today I attended the Extension Leadership Council, and they're going to do the reality store on Friday. And they need some more people. I don't know, Ms. Adrian, you may want to, it's interesting. I'll talk to you about it.
Okay.
You may want to join that group. And then county administrator and myself attended the VACO Chairpersons Institute on Friday, and our chairman was there. He was there for 2 days.
We were trying to teach him.
And amen.
They were educators.
We were the educators and there were about 26 chairs, administrators. Any vice chairs there?
Yes, a couple. A
couple of vice chairs. So that was Havana, you know, when you can.
It was very nice. I mean, now the Columbia folks are all pulling out, but on Friday, a big portion of our conversation was about the town of Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really nice to see. And then another part of it, we spoke and talked about Pleasant Grove Museum mm-hmm. and the park. So, and then the waterline, of course. So we had plenty of topics of discussion about Louvanna County.
Yes.
Anyone else? We will now open our first round of public comments. Anyone wishing to address the board should come to the podium and state your name and address. Please remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Anyone wishing to address the board at this time? Alrighty. Seeing no one wishing to speak.
No, I think
it's someone.
Is this the time we would speak about some of the items in front of the county as far as
no, we'll have a public hearing on that. Okay. Seeing no one wishing to speak, we will close the first round of public comments. Next, we will go on to a public hearing. F. The Catholic Diocese of Richmond, Steve Tugwell, Senior Planner.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. This is a special use permit request from St. Nicholas Learning Center. It is located in the parish hall of the Catholic Church on Route 53. And they are requesting a special use permit for an educational facility to allow up to 150 students with the classroom section of the parish hall. And also a after after-school daycare center. So because it's zoned agricultural, the special use permit is required. It would be a full-day, year-round school for up to 150 students aged 2 through 6. And I do want to clarify age 2 through 6 because I have heard from another person there's a contradiction in the some of the information that was provided. I think in one letter from the Richmond Diocese, it mentions 3 through 5. And it is 2 through 6. So I just wanted to clarify that. School hours would be 7 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. And then the after-school daycare would be K through 8. And that would be 3:30 to 6:30 p.m. So this is a location map. Again, zoned A1. And such requires a special use permit for the school and the daycare. Aerial photography shows the main church sanctuary and peripheral parking. It does not show the parish hall. I'm not sure when this aerial image was flown, but that is approximately here where the red point is located. A couple of photographs. There's two entrances off of 53 to this site. And this is looking back in the background there. You'll see the very large parish hall facility. It's roughly 8,000 square feet. That's where the learning center is located. So the few conditions that the staff is recommending with this special use permit: maximum number of students enrolled at the facility during the academic school year shall not exceed 150. Regular school hours of operation shall be 7 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. After school daycare hours of operation shall be 3:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. Then a couple of standard comments. With any SUP, the board urges representative reserves the right to inspect the business for compliance with these conditions at any time. The board has the authority to vote the SUP should there be evidence of a breach of the conditions. So again, in conclusion, it's a request for special use permission to allow for an educational facility for up to 150 students within the parish hall of St. Peter and Paul Catholic Church. And this is a portion of Tax Map 18, Section A of Apple, Parcels 7 and 7A. The building official has stated the building has the capacity for this use group and is equipped with fire alarm systems. Again, it's a fairly new building. Board of Supervisors may want to consider additional traffic that would be associated with the request. And with that, the motion is on your screen. I'd be happy to answer any questions. And Ms. Dempsey is here tonight. She's a representative for the application.
Any questions from the board? Mr. Weaver, Ms. Eager?
No.
Okay. Hearing none, we'll open the public hearing. Do we need to hear from the applicant?
Only if you want to. Only if you
have Does anyone need to hear from the applicant?
You usually offer the applicant a chance to speak.
Would the applicant like to come to the podium? Yes, ma'am. Okay. All right. Hearing none, we'll open the public hearing. Please keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Is anyone wishing to speak? With no one else wishing to speak, we will close the public hearing. Any questions or comments from the board?
No, I don't have any.
I think it's going to be a great addition. Mm-hmm. I'm not concerned about the traffic. The traffic is already there on Sundays, and there's good entranceways and exits.
Plenty of line of sight.
Plenty of line of sight, and I think the daycare / educational facility will be a welcome addition to the community.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Would you like a motion?
I concur.
Okay. Do we have a motion?
I move that the Board of Supervisors approve SUP 1510, a special use permit to allow for an educational facility and after-school daycare with respect to a portion of Tax Map 18, Section A, Parcels 7 and 7A, with the five conditions as described in the staff report.
Is there a second? I have a motion made by Ms. Seeger, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Now we'll move on to ZMP 15-006, the Gardner Trust, Steve Tubwell, Senior Planner.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a rezoning request from the Gardner Trust, ZMP 1506, to rezone from A1 to B1. It's approximately 13.4 acres of Tax Map 9, Section A, Parcel 9. It's in the Palmyra Election District, and it's within the Ravana Community Planning Area. Map overview here, it's the hash mark area. It does have frontage on Lake Monticello Road, Route 618, and it is currently predominantly wooded. It's aerial photography that shows the location. This is the applicant's site plan. They're proposing three phases. Phases one and two would be for the self-storage facilities, and phase three would be for future commercial retail center. A few photographs there. This is the frontage along 618. Again, heavily wooded. This property does back up to some residences in Lake Monticello, and this was taken from Mr. Carney's property. It looks off in the distance. I believe the nearest storage facility, if this were built, would be approximately 590 feet away, somewhat up the slope. So there is some gradual slopes and topography on this site. So again, it's a 13.4 acre parcel, and it's the Ravana Community Planning Area. The applicant's proffered out several uses, auto repair, auto sales, with one clarification that they are currently, as is customary with self-storage facilities, to allow or accommodate for some vehicle rental. Folks need to be able to have a moving van to move things from A to B, and so he is proffered out specifically automobile sales with the exception of vehicle rental as an accessory, and I believe that most of the vehicle rental was dispatched from his existing location a little further down 618, and this would be an overflow site for that purpose. And additionally, he's zoned out car washes, gas stations, laundry facilities, large-scale retails, and indoor shooting ranges. Applicant has also proffered a 50-foot tree buffer, earth tone exterior finishes, and no lighting or storage unit doors on buildings that adjoin residences within the Lake Monticello community. So again, phases one and two would be limited to self-storage use only, with the nearest dwelling located 285 feet away. Phase three is approximately 2.7 acres fronting on Route 618. And it's planned for future retail development. Comprehensive plan considers this an area that is conducive to further development due to location and proximity to transportation and residential. If this is approved, a site development plan would be required. They would be allowed to phase this, where they would receive sketch approval from the Planning Commission for all three phases and then come back with a final plan for each phase. So in conclusion, this request appears to be consistent with the county's comprehensive plan and that it's the Ravana Community Planning Area or growth area. Additional services and infrastructure are needed to accommodate the higher density residential development of that area. And the board may want to consider how the goals and objectives align with the request. Goals and objectives of the comprehensive plan, rather, align with their request. And with that, the motion's on your screen. I'd be happy to answer any questions. The applicants are also here
any
this evening.
From the board?
I know there were some concerns about stormwater management. You know, certainly right. That's one of the major concerns from the LMOA. Can you
right.
speak to that point?
Well, I'm gonna defer the technical specificity of that to Mr. Shemp. However, that will be substantially covered at the site development plan stage. It will have to go to DEQ for review. And as I understand it, a document requiring maintenance and site inspection in perpetuity is required as part of the housekeeping, so to speak, of the site and the stormwater management facility. And I know Mr. Carney has emailed all of you a letter stating that Mr. Burns has graciously listened to the neighbors' concerns, and he has been willing to meet a lot of their requests, and is hoping that he will continue to do so with the possible relocation of the BMP. But again, I think that's just something that's going to have to be evaluated at the site development plan, and I will defer any more specificity to that to Mr. Shem.
Anyone else? Any other questions?
No, I just want to hear from people.
Okay, like to call the applicant to the podium. Or do you have anything you'd like to add?
Just very quickly.
Yes, sir.
Good evening. My name is Carlos Burns. I live at Lake Monticello, 40 Zebeck Road, and I'm here representing Flavanna Self Storage today. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak. We are requesting this rezoning to expand our existing property, which has been there for roughly 23 years. This past year, we literally were running out of space to rent to customers, and several requests coming in that we could not meet. So that's the purpose of this new facility. We are 1.4 miles away, and this will be treated as fundamentally a remote site. Most of the activity will occur down at our primary site at 21 Burns Plaza, and that's where the office will be. And then these units will be remote units and some overflow of the truck rental U-Haul facility there. We proposed this site, we believe, fits well within the comprehensive plan. It was voted on by the Planning Commission and sent ahead with approval. Over the past few months, we have made a good faith effort to meet the needs of our neighbors. We held several meetings with neighborhood properties. We made several adjustments, some of which you saw in terms of the phasing, and we've included as proffers in this to try to put that into law. And we believe that we've met the needs of Flavanna County as well as our neighbors, and we respectfully request your approval for this rezoning.
Anyone have any questions?
So when you speak of it as being a remote site, I mean, is there change in the nature of one pod at that location versus
no,
the other
one? No, it's the buildings.
Storage or?
The buildings are virtually identical. They'll probably be the same manufacturer. And the only difference is the existing facility color scheme was 23 years ago, and this scheme will be a similar look, but with a natural color. It's a light tan with a greenish kind of door on it to try to blend into the foliage.
And they're month-to-month rentals?
Yes, they're all month-to-month rentals. You have a lock, you lock it, you're responsible. We'll have both climate control and non-climate control space there.
Any other questions?
Does your current facility have climate control?
It's very similar in nature to the existing facility in terms of its operations.
I'll just say it was very nice to see the correspondence going back and forth and how cordial everyone was trying to be and how much you were trying to meet the neighbors' needs.
I believe we worked really hard at that, and I will say this: the neighbors were always cordial. They wanted some changes to be made, and where we could, we've tried to do that, and we've said where we can continue to work with them, we will try to do that as well.
Any other questions?
Now, what kind of lighting is around?
It's a full cutoff lighting in our last building that we built was a self storage unit. The new dark skies requirement was already in place, so these are all full cutoff. There'll be LED lightings, high efficiency lighting, and much lower intensity. Plus, we've proffered in there, the lighting will always all be on the opposite side of the buildings to where the neighborhood is. So if you're looking down, the only light you'll see is up against the wall. You won't see the actual lights themselves. They'll be down behind a wall somewhere for them.
Any other questions? Okay. No other questions from the board. We will now open this for public hearing, public comments. Anyone wishing to speak, please come to the podium. Keep your comments to 5 minutes, on topic, and directed to the board.
Good evening. My name is Mr. Carney, Stephen Carney. I live at 7 Riverview Terrace. I have to agree, Mr. Burns has worked with us and has been quite amicable with a number of the changes that have come. I am currently probably the only property owner remaining that has a concern about this BMP feature, which is going to be a dam, and it's going to be literally about 50 feet away from my property line. I've asked Mr. Burns that once he gets a site plan to continue hopefully working in good faith, that he would be able to maybe move that feature back, provide additional screening, which would be less impact on my particular property, because right now I'm looking out over a deck out of a beautiful mound of trees, and this will not fit the topography. He took the time before the holidays to sit with us, me and my wife, explain why the BMP feature would have to be there because of the topography's layout of the land, and all I asked him is once he gets a site plan that he continue to work with us in good faith and see if he could move back that feature and provide additional screening as needed to make a less impact on our particular property. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next.
Hi, my name is Christopher Perez. I'm a resident of Lake Monticello, 739 Jefferson Drive. And I attended the first Planning Commission meeting, and I voiced my concerns about the intensity of the use at the time, and I still have those same concerns with regards to going from 13 acres of agricultural to just totally leveling it almost all at the front and halfway through the middle in three phases of commercial use. I thought two phases would have been enough, considering the fact that they already have an up zone at the very front of undetermined commercial use. But the Planning Commission felt that it was appropriate to approve it or recommend approval to y'all, and I respect that. The one thing that I would hope in the future when we go through, I believe there's going to be other rezonings coming along this corridor. If we can go ahead and try not to dissuade the citizens in participating, I think that would go a long way. At the Planning Commission meeting, I felt like we were being lectured to for not attending comp plan or not participating in the comp plan. And it really seemed like the PC was ready to approve it just because the comp plan recommended approval. The comp plan is a guide, and the citizens and what transpires with regards to use should be taken into consideration. And I just felt that at the Planning Commission meeting it didn't really happen too much with speaking of one specific planning commissioner. But I did feel Miss Eager listened and was very helpful with citizens. Aside from that, I do feel that the stormwater area needs to be pushed back. Mr. Carney's property is highly impacted visually. When they said in the staff report 270 feet from the nearest home, that's including his own property, which I don't think they should consider that at all because of the slopes, which staff has been out there, and it is a substantial ravine that slopes up. So the actual buffer that would be useful is more like 50, 75. So otherwise, I think it's appropriate based on some of the stuff. I wish we could cut that closest phase to the residences back and only keep one phase of self-storage and then the undetermined front portion, just so we could have a true buffer. It was previously said that residential lots would go here, and would staff, would citizens want that? I think we would much rather have residential lots all the way up closer to our property line than a commercial use with no staff and nobody actually watching it. And so that's my take on it. Thanks.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Hi. I just want to say I'm here in support of the development of this property for Chris Fairchild, 15 Tobacco Terrace.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Carlos, I've known since I first had started my business, and I needed somewhere to move to, and he had his first building down there, and I went down and told him I was looking at other places and in other areas to move to, and wondered what he could do as he's building the second building. And he said, I'd like to figure out a way to keep you in Fluvanna and serve my business too. And he kept some walls out and made me a little place of business and even built this little office on the front. And then when it was time to move and we grew out of that, Carlos said, I'd like to help you stay and help my business. And he built us that front building that looks like a somewhat like a house up there. Carlos built that building and that design because he cared about it, the impact on the community, how it looked in this somewhat residential area. Then, by the way, when we said we needed 15,000 square feet, he said, you got to move. And, but I think Carlos has done a great job at trying to adjust on this property and meet the neighbors' needs. He's a part of this community, had one of the first houses in Lake Monticello, and I think that shows in his want to adjust and meet the needs of the community. I'm very mindful of the types of growth we have in Fluvanna, and I see this as pretty low impact. It's low light pollution, low traffic, well buffered, and it's in a growth zone where growth is going to come to that area. As another gentleman said, you'll have other decisions to make. As far as other types of growth that could come on that same property, this is pretty low impact. So I would urge you to support the project and support Carlos Burns' growing business. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Rafflin.
Good evening. I'm David Raffley, 356 Union Mills Road. And first I want to sidebar. I really want to thank the board for taking the opportunity to serve. I know it's not easy to be there, go through the election process to get elected, and then to sit there and serve this county, but I appreciate your time and efforts and commitment to that, so thank you. And with that, I am a 1975 Fluvanna County High School graduate, and that is from the new high school. At least it was new in 1934. Anyway, and I'm also a small business owner in Fluvanna County. I've owned a business for 37, 38 years. And I have known Carlos for about 35 years and have known him both professionally and personally. And I have a lot of respect for him, both personally and professionally. And I think similar to what Chris said, not to reiterate too much, but the way he has started that business and grown that business, I think is very reflective of his integrity. And I think that it is important for the county within its economic development plan. I think it's more bang for the buck to encourage existing businesses and promote an environment for existing businesses to grow and thrive than to expend that energy to try to bring in new businesses. That is a business that is working and has reached 100% capacity, and I think it's in the county's best interest to encourage that business to grow. It is obviously meeting a need of the citizens of this county, or they wouldn't be full and looking for additional space. So again, thank you for the time to speak to you. I hope that y'all will see to approve this plan tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else?
My name is Jim Higginbotham. I live at 2077 Lake Monticello Road, which is across where this Mr. Carlos Burns is planning on putting these storage units. This young buck back here doesn't have anything. I'm a graduate of Fluvanna High School from the old high school, which was 1966. So I've been around here a long time, and obviously I still live in Fluvanna County. So a couple of things I'd like to point out. You folks have got to make a decision on whether you think this is the best interest of the county and the people. I have a feeling that it's going to impact the value of property. I was also in the moving and storage business for 45 years with Allied Van Lines out of Charlottesville, Virginia. I can tell you that there's lots of things that go in storage units, and whether this will happen or not. Carlos and I go back a long ways. He's a fine gentleman. He told me when he first started this in the storage business back where he's at now that he was scared to death, and he built his first unit. So he has expanded, and he's done very well. The other thing, Mr. Bibb graciously told us what could go there, chicken farms, hog lots, pig pens, and things of that nature. So this is obviously a pretty low-pack thing. I would like to please take into account the folks around there, river runs across the street, in Jefferson Park, which the folks live at. I think it's going to decrease the value of property. You folks have got to make a decision. It's up to y'all, but appreciate you, your time and your effort. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, sir. Is there anyone else? With no one else wishing to speak, we will close the public hearing. Any questions or comments from the board?
Yeah, I would like to know what they plan on planting in that buffer zone, because that seems to be some concern there of what they're going to see when they come out on their back porch and all. What are you going to put in there?
Primarily, if you look at where it's to the very, let me get my orientation here, right, yeah, where he's showing that area, we won't touch much of anything in the buffer zone except down there right where you'll see where the existing stream is coming out. We'll be putting some plants in there because we'll probably be doing a little bit of work as far as that BMP is concerned. Now, what we are going to try to do, and I have asked the engineer to do, is if it's possible and reasonable to push that farther back up the stream. The stream goes up diagonally. You can sort of see the topography of that. But that's going to be driven by the topography and what we can and can't do reasonably. So essentially, where we're not building, we're not taking anything out. The trees will be the trees that will be there. The pond area behind it, and it's a dry pond, it's just going to catch the water that's coming down and let it absorb so it doesn't just run down in the lake. That area has to be clean. That means that there are no trees allowed on that dam. You've seen this thing at Lake Monticello, how careful they are about what grows on the side of the dam. We need to keep that clean of nothing but grass and leaves. What we can do is put things in front of that in that buffer zone, and we that's what we promised Mr. Carney we would do. Other than that, for the where there's nothing planned, we won't touch anything. Where phase two is planned, initially we won't touch anything there. We might trim some trees out a little bit to try to make space for evergreens and undergrowth to grow up, because these are really, this is old forest in here. It's pretty high up. And we'd like to get some things to grow in there that is even a better buffer than exists today. So we wouldn't be doing much work in phase two area other than maybe trimming out a few trees to open up to get sunlight in, just let some of the undergrowth fill in to make it harder to see the buildings. The buildings you see there in phase one are roughly 500 feet away, and it'll be primarily woods up to that point, except where that stream and that dry pond is. We have to clean that out. And you can see where the road is and behind the buildings. We will be putting evergreen-type plants in there.
That's what I was wondering about.
Right. Those will be an evergreen type of plants, with the idea being we're trying to keep any kind of light. Excuse me. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Here. There you go. So you can see. Let me get the button here. You can see the roads coming down here. So we're going to be putting evergreens along in here and along here, and especially right anywhere that there's a light from a car light might shine down that way. The proposal is this is a solid building here, and any breaks like this, we've got evergreens in there so lights can't shine through and into their windows. So we're trying to minimize the amount of light that can get through to the houses.
But what about right down where the houses are?
Right down here?
I know you said you're going to leave the vegetation there.
Right.
But can some evergreen go into that area also?
Yes, we're going to try to put a few evergreens in here. That's why we have to thin it out a little bit, because if I put them in there now, they'll die.
Okay.
They just die. It's so dense up in the upper canopy.
Now, are those going to be evergreens down there behind the pond dam, I see?
Yes. This is...
To the left.
Oh, here?
Yeah.
Yes. Those are an evergreen
those
type of plant.
Yeah.
That's what I was wondering about.
Yes.
They're trying to block it.
That's trying to give him some permanent that'll grow up here, and essentially, because this is Mr. Carney's house right here, that's the closest, and that'll give him some buffering to this hill. Now, that hill eventually, initially will be grass on it. Once the grass is well established and we don't have an erosion problem, obviously we can't let that happen. Once that's established, then leaves will start to fill in here, and in the winter there won't be big trees growing out of here, but it will almost turn invisible into that hill. It'll just look like the topography there coming up the hill, because this is a fairly, if you look here, this is a fairly steep section of hill right here.
How much of a pond is that? How large is that?
I think he's got there.
Is that a half acre I see on it?
How high is the pond dam?
14 feet is what I'm roughly estimating.
Big? Yes. Half an acre.
Half acre, okay.
Yeah.
But there's nothing in it.
It's just roughly 14 feet from the base up.
Okay. As a dry pond?
Yes.
It basically is only going to hold some water for, you know, enough time.
The plan, what Justin has told me is roughly 24 hours after a storm, it should settle in. Now, obviously, if it's a heavy storm, there will be an overflow, because you don't want to breach the top. That'll run underneath, and it'll just, that would go back into the existing stream that's there. But I don't think that's going to happen very often.
Mr. Burns?
Yes?
Can you tell us how long you think it would take you to fill out phase one?
Right now, I'm estimating this is probably 15 to 20 years before we even get that. I don't know that we'll ever even grow back into here. This is just slightly, I think it's 0.75 of what we have. It took us 20 years to get to, actually it's 23 years now to get to this point. So this is a roughly 15 to 20 year development period where we will clear this, and but we'll be building, we'll probably start with a building roughly here and here. And this will be one-sided. The doors will all be on this inside with the lights on the inside, and this will be a non-climate controlled space with doors on both sides. So the drivers will come in here and drive into this area.
So the phase two road is not being built until phase
two? This phase two, the only work we will have to do is down in this area right here, because we've got to get that hill so that we're properly graded for phase one. So there'll be a little bit into that area, but it's basically just getting this topography built. Plus, this is where we're going to take out a few of the trees, make sure that we've got plenty of light coming in here for all these evergreens.
And the area around the buildings themselves are all paved, is all paved, correct?
This is going to be a crush and run through here. This will be an asphalt up into this region.
Okay.
It's a little bit, it slows the runoff a little bit.
Sure, no, that's good to hear.
And you can put, there at the backside of phase two where the pond is, you can go ahead and start some of your evergreens and get those to start growing.
Yes,
so by the
yes.
time you build, they'll already have a good...
That's part of the plan, is we're going to try to get some things in here. That's why we need to thin out a little bit.
Right. Are there any other questions?
No, I would just commend the applicant for all his hard work and trying to make sure that he accommodates his neighbors.
Thank you.
And being neighborly.
On the fact that he was so highly recommended by other fellow business people.
By the way, just to be clear, that's the Carlos Burns everyone's talking about. I'm the son.
Yeah, I would like to say it's been a pleasure working with both the community and the applicant. This is... I'd have to say I don't think I've ever seen people work better together than in this project. And I
thank you.
Everybody for what they've done.
And I thank our neighbors for working
yes.
with us.
Okay, well, with no other questions.
I'd like to make a motion.
Yes, ma'am.
It's on the screen.
I move that the Board of Supervisors approve 1506 of the attached ordinance from ZMP 1506. A request to amend the Fluvanna County zoning map with respect to approximately 13.4 acres of tax map 9, section A, parcel 9, to rezone the same from A1 agriculture general to B1 business general.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion been made by
conditional.
Only 5 conditional. Yes.
Thank you.
And we have a motion made by Mrs. Eager, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. You're welcome, sir. Thank you all for reaching out the way you did and being neighborly. Next, we're going to move on to action matters. Let me turn my page here. At tab... H, adoption of Fluvanna County's revised vision statement. Mr. Nichols.
Yes, sir. At your off-site planning session, Mr. Poppins had recommended the vision statement be modified to take out the word central, just the heart of Virginia. And on the map, we are on the upper left-hand side, we're the heart of Virginia.
So that's Saturday morning.
Saturday even they understood that. So, and this is just to codify that so that we have it on record.
I just want to point out that word gateway is still so.
The gateway is very important.
We have to leave that in there.
It's bothering how that got in there, but it's
okay. Do we have a motion?
Yes.
Mr. Weaver,
I move motion. Supervisors adopt the revised Fluvanna County vision statement by removing the word central from the prior vision statement.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion's been made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion's 5-0. Action matter I, appointment to the James River Water Authority, Mr. Nichols.
And so you had four applicants that spoke to you at your last meeting to talk about their interest in serving on the James River Water Authority to replace Mr. Gomez. The four names are here on your screen, and Mr. Dunning, Mr. Easter, Mr. Putner, and Mr. Swigert, and you've had their information and in your package this week, and then we just need an appointment. This will be, by state code, an appointment to finish out Mr. Gomez's term, and then you'll have to reappoint it at the end of 2017, or April of 2017, when Mr. Gomez's term expired.
Any questions from the board?
I think we had some very strong applicants, and we're lucky to have so many of them that had expertise and a desire to volunteer and help, but I really do feel that Mr. Dunning is the most qualified for the position based on his extensive experience in water management and with the Corps of Engineers. And so that would be my recommendation, and that's not with any prejudice against any of the other applicants.
No, they're really good applicants there.
I thought Mr. Easter summed it up best of all when he walked in from the podium at the end and went, well, I came just to make sure we were going to have a good applicant. Well, by golly, I didn't need to come up here. Do we have a motion?
I move to appoint Mr. Mark Dunning to the James River Water Authority Citizen Representative position, replacing Eric Gomez, who resigned with the term to begin immediately and to terminate April 19, 2017.
Second. We have a motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
And all opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. J, reappointment to the Economic Development Authority. Mr. Nichols, one more time.
Sir, you have several applicants. Mr. Flood, who's currently serving on the EDA, wishes to be reappointed, but you've also got Mr. Dorsey, Mr. Dunning, and Mr. Perry as applicants for the Economic Development Authority.
All righty. Are there any questions or comments from the board?
I'd like to reappoint.
Okay. Do we have a motion?
I move to reappoint Bert Flood to the Economic Development Authority, EDA, with a term to begin retroactively on January 1st, 2016, and to terminate December 31st, 2019.
Second.
We have a motion made by Mrs. Booker, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. 5-0. K, appointment, reappointment to the Job Board of Directors. Mr. Nichols.
So in this case, you've got two people, one of which is on the currently on the Fulham Partnership for Aging, and Mrs. Booker, who's our current member on the Jefferson Area Board for Aging Board of Directors. And Mrs. Booker, I think, is requesting reappointment.
Well, as much as I think, Mrs. Barrick would be great, I will side on my colleague and move to appoint her to the Jefferson Area Board of Aging Board of Directors, Fluvanna representative, with a term to begin February 29, 2016, and to terminate February 28, 2018.
Do I have a second?
Second.
We have a motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mrs. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Chair votes aye. 4-0.
I voted aye. Too.
You voted aye also? Okay. 5-0. One more time.
Yes, thank you all very much.
You're most certainly welcome. Thank you for your service, young lady. Okay, presentations. Normally not to exceed 10 minutes each. 2015 Board of Equalization Summary, Mr. Nichols.
I'm on a quick roll, but I'm not sure Mrs. Elliott will be doing the same. The Board of Equalization sent some information in just to give you a summary of their activities over the past year. Mr. Ellis, Mr. Hanna, and Mr. Rowan were the members, and Karen Burkhaw, Ms. Burkhaw was the alternate, and Joanne Rawls served as the administrative assistant for the Board of Equalization again this past year. They received far less appeals than they had in the prior year, and many more than the time before that. So there were only 29 appeals received, 28 residential and one agricultural. You can see on the screen the numbers that show there the types of appeals that were in, and only 11 of those 29 appeals were actually changed. They were all residential. There was three that were reduced in value and eight that were increased in value. And you can see the reasons down below, but a very low number. I think that's due to a couple things. A, that biennial reassessment makes things much more smooth, and you're not having these big sweeping changes like we did the last time when we went 6 years. And plus, Blue Ridge has done a really good job this year in our Board of Equalization, or this past year. The Board of Equalization was readily available for folks throughout the year. Any questions from the board? Remember, they'll be reconstituted. A Board of Equalization of some type will be reconstituted again January 1st, 2017, because you've got a reassessment, a full reassessment going on this year. That reassessment will go into effect January 1st, 2017, and you'll see the Board of Equalization again at that time for that year.
Now, these individuals have been on this board for a long time, haven't they?
A couple of them have. Mr. Rowan, I think, was new this last time.
Yeah.
Mr. Ellis and Mr. Hanna, I think, were on at least two times now. Ms. Burkhaw was new as an alternate. Ms. Rawls has been working with them for a number of years.
That's good.
Any other questions?
And we'll give you another slate of candidates, probably in November timeframe, for the following year's Board of Equalization. So we'll put out the call in the early fall and then get a list of candidates for the Board of Equalization, and then that'll come to you for a decision and appointment. Then they have to go to the Circuit Court.
Thank you, sir. We're going to move on to M, CSA Mid-Year Update. Ms. Jackie Myers, please step to the podium.
Thank you. I'm doing mid-year update, and most of the figures that are here, I actually got together in the middle of January. So there's been a little shift because CSA, you know, is a moving target, and there's kids moving in now to the program all the time. So I just wanted to clarify that. I'm presenting information a little bit differently than I do at my yearly report, but I think it will explain a little bit the factors that impact the fiscal aspects of the program. I always push the wrong one of these. Okay, I wanted to start with special education and placements. These would be like residential placements. Our numbers have moved day school, that would be the alternate day school, to 20, actually at this point 21, so a little bit higher than last year. Foster care has moved from 2 to 8. The 8 is actually was 9, but we only had a child in, one of the children in foster care was only in foster care 8 days, and then custody went to the parents. So that's not included here, but we have 8 children currently in foster care, and our residential placements have gone from 11 to 12, and I'm not including in that a number 3 youths who from July 1st have actually either left or were about to leave residential placement. So these are kids in placement at this time, not going any place anytime soon. And how does that translate into dollars? And this is something that I just am trying to get the board to see a visual to get some appreciation for this. But these are the yearly costs for day school placements. And these are the schools we use where we place our children that can't be educated in the public school, and the number of students in those placements. There's, as you can see, the cost is quite high. There's also in Harambe, which is the Elk Hill Day School, we've moved from 5 to 6 students, and Lafayette has moved from 7 to 8 students. And you look at these costs, and I also would like you to know that if any of these children require speech, occupational therapy. Those add-on services are $6,000 to $7,000 a year above these costs here. So it is kind of pricey, and that's why when we, I feel like I should have subtitled this, oh, that CSA budget, why is that budget so high? This kind of gives you an insight into what these placement costs.
Excuse me, for my own educational purposes, I'm familiar with Virginia Institute of Autism and Lafayette School. Are the services provided by Hammerby, Faison, and Elk Hill any different?
Virginia Institute for Autism and the Faison School focus on autistic youth. Harambe, Lafayette, Elk Hill, Charlottesville is more behavioral, educational kinds of issues that kids have that can't be served within the public school setting.
Great, thank you.
Do they serve any autistic kids in the classrooms in our school system?
Yes, they're No. And I'm very happy you brought that up because this is something that not everybody understands. There are many children, autism is a spectrum, and there are many children that are served in our public school system that are at the lower end of that spectrum. But as children move to the higher end of that spectrum, they will have behaviors and educational needs that could never be served in the public school. For some of these youth, to give you some example, you might have a teenager who is learning to dress themselves or use utensils or work at that stage. So that would be the kind of educational challenge for that child. Others might have behaviors where they headbang, where they have to wear helmets of some sort so that they don't self-injure themselves. So this is the kind of level that you're working at when you're trying to teach. It's not like in a regular public high school setting.
And these are per student costs, correct?
Yeah, per student cost. That's why you kind of have to multiply per number of students to get the real impact on the budget. I included foster care in this. It's not really, you'll do comparison of the different piece of information I have here. It's not the highest cost, but there is a cost associated with it. And that's why, we had 9 youths. One has left foster care, so there's a balance of 8.
Is that the total cost?
That's total. That's not per child.
No, that's total for 6 months. And there's also can be other costs with foster care youth that perhaps social services would pick up, but this is the impact on the CSA budget for those youth. And then we have our residential placements. Again, different intensities, different levels of services, but it tells you, again, how much each of these placements cost per year. Some of these placements include schools. Other times it doesn't include school. Most of them do. They have a school on site. We have the one youth that was at Newport News has now done a step down, as we call it, to a lesser level of service by moving into a group home. However, though she's at a group home, she has to still go to Elk Hill Harambe School. So we're paying for day school placement plus residential placement, even though it's not at the intensity of supervision that Newport News was providing. So it's a good thing that she could move down, but it doesn't necessarily make it cheaper. Her combined costs per month are just slightly over $10,000, and that's with the step down. So it's just to talk about the fact that children might be improving in behaviors and step down to a lesser level of service. That doesn't mean it's necessarily a lesser cost.
Jackie, do we have any students that will never leave a residential placement?
Yes, there are 2 students that we have that will never leave a residential placement. Those would be the students at Grafton. Mm-hmm. They will go from the juvenile system into the adult system, and there's waivers that you can get that allow them to then access adult services. Those waivers are, there's long waiting lists for those waivers, so we have to apply for those waivers 2 and 3 years before they leave the juvenile system in hopes that then it will come and they will be granted a waiver so that they can go immediately into the adult system. And we've been very lucky with that. We've never had anybody sitting at home or waiting or sort of out of placement for a limbo period of time. But that's the Grafton placements.
Mm-hmm. Can you describe some of the service, I mean, some of the typical conditions children that would be in full residential services would have?
They might have, certainly mental health, intellectually disabled. They also might have a physical, they might have cerebral palsy or some sort of, you know, physical condition like that. But they're at a level that they're not going to be able to improve very much, or the level of improvement, just as we talked about with the autistic children, the level of improvement is in real baby steps. Let me explain. So that a child that might have like 17 violent outbursts in a month, so they're either self-injury or against staff and other peers, that might reduce to 15 in like a 3-month period. Then it might reduce to 12 in a 6-month period. So we're talking about very small change over a long period of time. So those are the kinds of things. And of course, independent living is always something we're trying to work with all children to achieve. But the level of independent living, of course, for some children is never going to be to have their own apartment, a job, a car. It's going to be able to take a shower by themselves, you know, dress themselves, use utensils, just basic kind of, self-maintenance kinds of things.
And are any of those centers addiction treatment centers or not?
Some of them do have some capacity to work with some level of substance abuse, but they're not specifically only for substance abuse. There are facilities that have programs that are within the umbrella program that would be for a specialized population like substance abuse, children with sexual issues, things like that.
How long are we responsible for some of these, and what would be an example?
Well, that is one of the reasons I want to show you this tonight. The children that are in special education right now are all at ages where they're not going to be leaving special education anytime soon. So they're not like 17. They're not 18. You know, special education, students can stay in special education until they get a diploma, if they have an IEP, until they're 21. So they can continue through then. But these children are not of 17, 18, and in that last piece right. of getting right before getting a diploma. These children are much younger, and they're going to be in for several years. So this is going to be an ongoing thing. We have children that are in special education that are, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old and like that. I mean, some are a little bit older, but it's going to be several years that they're going to be in these programs. They're not going to move anytime soon. And the residential programs are usually, I would say, 12 to 18 months is about the average that somebody stays in a residential program. I think our last time I checked our statistics on the Office of Children's Services website, our average length of stay in residential programs was 210 days, which is actually pretty good. But when you place a child, they're going to tell you that the average placement is 12 to 18 months. Are there any other questions?
Well, I'm wondering about the age of 18 or 21. What responsibility do we have through those years, if any?
It depends if a child's in foster care or if they're special education. If they're in foster care, when they're 18, they can choose to either stay in foster care or not stay in foster care. If they do stay in foster care, they can stay in until they're 21. If they're special education, they can stay in school. In other words, they don't have enough credits to get a diploma at 18 or, you know, 17 and a half. So they stay in school and they continue their education until their 22nd birthday. That then they're absolutely cut off, whether they have that diploma or not.
I see there some places that's different, because I have my sister has a severely artistic daughter who's in Montgomery County, Maryland, and they take care. She's 57 years old, and they're still taking care of her. She's still going to school. Now, we used to have five that the kids could go to and do little, if they were capable, do little jobs and live in group homes. So,
but that's the adult system. Well, we don't have it as a locality,
right,
through CSA responsibility after their 22nd birthday. Then that would go to the adult system.
Who pays for that?
The state pays for it. I'm not an expert at the adult system, so I don't know all the funding streams that go into paying for services for children that need services beyond the right when they age out of a Children's Services Act.
It used to be when kids aged out, you had to start early finding a group placement for them, like if you had a mentally handicapped child. So they go into group homes.
Sometimes they do. Sometimes they don't necessarily go to a group home. But if they go to a group home, they have case managers. Their case manager that works with them as adolescents, they would then work with the different agencies. It might be Department of Rehabilitative Services. It could be a training program, WorkSource, or Woodrow Wilson, or any of these adult services, and then those people have case managers that work with our case managers, and there's a transition period, and then they continue on from there.
Yeah, and I think it's just important to know that those kids are not just turned out to fend for themselves. A lot of times their parents can't. And so I did special ed for years here in Fluvanna County, and we always tried to find something for the kids to be and help the parents put them in some program, Fishersville, or all those to learn some kind of trade, and they could be contributing citizens.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah. The workshop center. WorkSource Enterprises in Charlottesville. I used to work with WorkSource Enterprises when I had a manufacturing company that made men's belts and braces. We had them assemble some of the goods. It was good. It was good for them. For us.
Got something accomplished. All right. Any other questions? Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll move on to M, Public Safety Radio System Towers Update. We've all got a new nice little sheet right here.
Yeah. Remember that sheet. She'll get towards the end of her brief, and she'll go through that in detail. Before that, it's pictures.
I like pictures.
Me too.
Good evening. Thank you for in advance for paying attention. I'm supposed to be brilliant, brief, and thorough, so I'm not sure if those all
go.
I know.
Usually, in layman's terms.
Yeah, yes, I will try. Okay, as you will recall, on the January 6th board meeting, the board requested the project team to research some additional options about public safety towers. And so that's what we're bringing you some other options. And hopefully by the end of the evening, or by the end of my presentation, I would love to have some additional guidance, because if we, and decision making about where to go, how to go forward, because it's really kind of contingent on what you, on your guidance on how fast we can continue moving with the project.
So you're asking us to be brief, brilliant, and to the point.
Yes. Okay, the original plan that we discussed last time, and what was in the proposal and in the contract for the radio project, was based on the RFP for the project. And in that, we requested that the vendor develop a system utilizing existing sites or ones that were in process of being constructed with a preference for using the towers under 200 feet that we have in existence. And Motorola's proposal gives us a guarantee of 95% service reliability using that requirement of using the short towers. But what that meant is that we needed to co-lease space on those towers. The county doesn't own all of them. So it would be, and then so when we got to the point where we were looking at leasing that space, the monthly costs were ranging from $1,800 to $4,700 per tower section. And depending on whether it's a receive and transmit tower, you can have a number of pieces of equipment which take up more space on the tower. So, and I'll show you some, we do have some updated pricing based on some of the negotiations. So we do have some differences in pricing that I will talk to you about. So the team looked at about a dozen different scenarios for tower placement and heights. But what we were looking at is looking at the design was, what if we would let coverage determine site location and tower heights? Now, we didn't go back and throw all the towers out, but we looked at especially the ones that were maybe more problematic, like the Cohasset site that is a receive and a transmit site that would require 60 feet of the tower if we put everything on the tower. Which essentially eliminates anybody else coming onto that tower. So what if, and some of the discussion was, well, what if we would build taller towers, like 300 to 400 footers in the county? How would that affect coverage? What if we put a tall tower at the landfill? Would it possibly eliminate the VFW site? Or, you know, could we combine some things? It doesn't, by the way. What if we would build tall towers? How might they affect our revenue potential? For example, there are some counties that have built tall towers, 300 to 400 footers, and then restricted all commercial towers to be short, maybe 125 or even 200 feet. Cell carriers need that height, and so it makes the tall towers more advantageous for leasing, and then ups the probability of carriers coming on and leasing space from us rather than building their own towers. And then finally, how do all these various scenarios affect coverage, and will our providers see better coverage in the field than the original design? Because if the original design is the best coverage and the best use of the for the frequency coverage, then maybe we need to really look back at, is the money for those leases better spent that way? The original design was 7 sites, and we were looking at these are 2 of the coverage maps. This side is the in-building coverage basically in residential buildings. It's light buildings, so like the high school would not get this kind of coverage in, and that's why we're putting the amplifier in there. But this is for smaller residential buildings. This is your coverage, and then this buffer zone it gives us coverage out 3 miles outside of the county boundaries, and this is with portables and mobile radios. So this one would be the coverage map that we'd look at for the deputies riding around in the vehicles. And where you see, just as a note here, and you'll see this in the subsequent slides, where it's clear in all of these areas, that doesn't mean there's no coverage. It just means it's not in that 95% guarantee. It might be 90%. It might be 94%. It might be 80%, that kind of thing. But it's highly unlikely that there would be no coverage in those areas. And considering that if I would show you the coverage map of our current system, we only have, it's guesstimated at about 35% of coverage in the reliable coverage in the county. So going to this, even where we have some areas that would not be at 95, is going to be vastly different and vastly better for our providers.
Well, you don't need a lot of coverage in the middle of the lake.
Correct. So, well, actually, if you have a boater or an accident in there, you do. In looking at all those scenarios, what the team came back with is if we would build two towers that would be 350 footers and put one at the landfill and one to the west side of the lake. This area of the county is notoriously bad in coverage. You can see where it's spotty here too, but there the providers will tell you how, I mean, they can be just on that side and not have coverage at all. That was why the importance of the Carter's Mountain to give the coverage into the county. So if we would put tall towers here, the rest of these towers could remain at the 200 feet here. This reach coverage. If we would lower the lake one to 200 feet, we would have to raise the Kent Store one because of the line of sight that way. But it needs to be over. I think it's like 325 feet in order to make this link.
What's the size of the New Dominion one?
That's what I was going to say. The Dominion one currently is a little further over here. It's about a mile as the crow flies from where that little spot is there. The current tower is old and needs to be replaced. It cannot hold any additional equipment, and it's rusty and all that. And they are in process. You will be seeing SUP coming forth to move that tower to behind where the park is and the BREMO park. And the elevation there is 70 feet less than at the current site, so they're proposing this tower will be 400 feet. The current one is 325. So to make the difference with the elevation, it'll need to be another 70 feet higher. And this is the one tower they allow public safety to be on there free of charge as a public safety to the community. And we want to continue to use this one as a receive site. There's also with the Dominion one, because of what they're with the new tower for Dominion is also going to be part of the new pipeline and of their monitoring system for their new pipeline is another reason why they're getting ready to rebuild that tower, because they have new equipment that needs to go on that. And in that process, there's a tower that I think Buckingham currently uses that they're not going to be able to use anymore. So Buckingham is planning to put some public safety equipment on the Dominion Tower, and we have been talking about sharing some ground space. It might be in the form of they would have their equipment in an outside cabinet that would be tied into our electric. We would not share the structure. If we would, we would ask for a bigger structure and put a divider in it so they have their own entrance. But it would make more sense because of the small equipment that they have to do an outside cabinet. But to be able to share some of the maintenance costs on that site.
Did you already cover what the red was on that?
Oh, no. And the red that you're seeing here, this is represents better coverage than what this represents. So as you see, these clear areas are actually filled in with red. So this scenario would give us better coverage than what we're getting in our original proposal. And where it's really important when we start looking at it is down here by the river. Again, this is this picture. Pardon?
Don't go up to the right. We're still thin up there.
Yes, it's still. But now again, that only means that it's less than 95% guaranteed, but it could be 93%. And that's part of what we will work at the coverage testing. We will go through the entire county in probably quarter to half mile grids. And it's basically, can you hear me now? Through each of those grids, and they will pass or fail depending on how clearly that signal gets through, and they also test the signal strength in each of those areas. So, and it also means too that it might mean, like it is now, if you move 10 feet to the left, you might have 95% coverage. The heights, and looking at the towers, the heights are needed due to the county's terrain in order to let the microwave links see each other. And our system here in this, is, if you recall, is actually a circle like this. It's a link circle with a spur off from the Cohasset over to the VFW, because Carter's Mountain and the VFW site cannot see each other. So it gets its information from the rest of the circle. That means if there's a problem with this tower, the signal goes around the other way. It's kind of a redundancy so that we always have coverage. Right now, the Palmyra tower is the only receive and transmit site. Everything else is receive only. So if you have a broken link, like if the leased line in Kent Store goes down, there's no coverage in Kent Store because there's no redundancy that can happen.
Cheryl.
Yes.
I know that the utmost importance is that we have good communication with our rescue squad and fire and police and so forth. But when we get all of this done, does that mean that our citizens will have better telephone, internet things, or we have to depend on the providers going on those towers? If no providers go, then that does not help our citizen who has to go up a mile up the road in order to use their cell phone.
Correct. What this is, there are two different systems.
Mm-hmm.
For a cellular system or a broadband system and public safety, there are different systems. However, when you put the towers in, that we know that these towers will, when they're up, mm-hmm. that they will reach the entire county at this kind of level, then for cell carriers, it means making a business case for it.
Okay.
Is there enough customers in
right.
a particular
That's
area
valid.
For them to go on?
Customers.
Broadband, I know, is something that you are interested in and that we will be doing a lot more looking at. And part of what we will definitely look at is the existing towers and how does that link up? Because broadband works the same way. They make shorter hops with the microwave the same way the public safety system does. Public safety microwaves are 6 feet in diameter. Broadband are usually about 3 foot. So they have much shorter hops in between than public safety.
If you have a county-owned tower, especially the two 350s,
mm-hmm.
the one near the lake and one down near at the landfill, if you've got two 350 towers in an area that someone may contemplate putting service there, but the cost on the towers is too prohibitive on the commercial towers, and oh, by the way, it only covers a small area.
Right.
But now you build a 350-foot
right.
tower,
more.
We use the top maybe 50 feet for our
right.
things, and we put them below there
mm-hmm.
at a lower cost, and they could get a space on another tower at a lower level.
Mm-hmm.
That may draw
may
folks
draw.
In, and
yeah.
that's what a lot of localities, especially underserved yeah. localities, are doing. It meets our needs because we can probably do this less expensively than the original alternatives,
mm-hmm.
but still provide space for commercial carriers at a reasonable rate, a more reasonable rate than they get from other commercial tower owners. So we're hopeful, but there are no absolute guarantees.
Right.
We're going to show you some revenues, but they're projected revenues on what we think.
And carriers also monitor new towers going in. So if they see 200-footers, that's like, oh, okay. But if there's a couple 350-footers, they're going to know that immediately when the applications go in through the FAA.
Mm-hmm.
So they do monitor that.
Okay.
And so in the new design, there's no backhaul up to Carter, or there's no
correct
movement to Carter's Mountain.
It actually keeps it all within. It's all with the whole circuit is within the county. Now, we also looked in looking at all the scenarios. We also looked at there's a tower in around the prison, and we also have the water tower across in Louisa and the possibilities of a water tower on our side. But this area actually serves better. We actually checked Tenasca to see whether a tower in that area would help. This is a really good location for this. There, we also looked at, well, do we move this site further to the north. But coverage-wise, this works really, really well for us in keeping it in. When Louisa's project comes online, they are planning at this point to use their existing public safety towers and expanding, but they are looking at linking into our system, as you know, as we've discussed. So they would need to get signal from one of these towers that would link in at a later time.
Yeah, the taller our tower is, easier for them for a line of sight.
And the water tower, that the anticipated height of the water,
it'll be almost identical to the Louisa one,
which is what, about 150, 200 feet?
I'm not sure it's that high. Maybe 125. But
we already have a water tower at the prison.
Yeah, at the prison, but not in Zion Crossroads.
We can't use that for our fire flows. We have to have a water tower for our water system.
Right, but if you're looking for a water tower to put a.
Yeah. Right, and we checked.
The problem is that's downhill.
Yes, and it's too low.
Zion Crossroads, it's much higher elevation than it is at the Women's Correctional Facility. And what Mr. O'Brien is talking about is our new tower that would be near the intersection of 215 and 15 will be very similar height, almost identical height, to the one on the Louisa side by the Walmart, because they'll be equalized such that we can use them for fire flows on either side if there's a failure. But the Women's Correctional Facility isn't high enough because it drops way down. It's not high enough to provide coverage in the left-hand corner of the top left northwest corner of the county.
Yeah, my one question looking at this, and I'm no expert on communication. We put a 350-foot tower very, very close to our county line. I don't know. If we could utilize that into more towards the middle to be able to cover more area.
Well, these are also direction. There are also some directional antennas, depending on way it works. The other thing is when you have a lower tower.
It's supposed to change it.
When you have a lower tower, the signal has to go out to the horizon. When you have a higher tower, the signal can be angled down a little bit more. So you can actually get more of an intensity than you can with shorter towers, because you have to shoot them out a little bit longer. So and the placement of it is the loop. The loop is what is important, and it has to do, the placement here also has to do with the terrain and being able to make the links. And the Sheriff's Tower is the master site too.
Now, one of the things about putting it there too is if you put a 350 at the sheriff's office, it's vastly more visible because of the open area around Pleasant Grove Park and where the sheriff's office is. Because when you're coming down 53 towards 15, you're looking, you can see the towers that are crossed over by the fire station. But if you put a 350 there, it'd be much higher. At the lake, because it's so treed on that side, this would be outside the lake in some wooded area, it would be still high enough to cover, but it would be less likely to be seen from any of the major thoroughfares there unless you happen to be just at the right height.
In my mind, I was sitting here thinking up there about where Papa Jim's is, but more back in. That's more towards the central portion of the northern part of the county.
I don't disagree, except that we got radio engineers working on that.
That's why they're not an expert.
Nor am I, but that's why we're having them do the design and look at all the topography, find out what the best possible place is that'll give us broadest coverage across the areas.
I have something.
And then plus those ones on the three on the right side, those are all pre-built towers.
Yes, this one, these three are all built.
Right.
And as this is looking at the in-building and the street coverage of the new design, and again, down here along the lake where it's clear, we don't have along the river, there aren't very many buildings down here, but as you see over here on the on-street, so the portables, if there's search and rescue or a water rescue on the James, which has been a major concern with not having coverage, you can see there is more red in here along that way, and it's filled in. Even in Columbia, there's coverage in that area, which is, so this, there might not be complete coverage in a building, but if you step outside, it's very nicely covered all the way in the county.
In general, is there a stronger sort of public sentiment to the larger towers, and also aren't there stronger lighting requirements around the larger towers?
They have to have a strobe on them. That's required for anything above 200 feet. And 5 years ago, we talked about this kind of at length on the Planning Commission. And at that time, everybody in the universe for 10 years before that, every time somebody wanted to build a tower, it was like the world was going to end.
Yes.
And I don't mean that in any kind of bad way, but it was not the common everyday thing.
Right.
And every time you put up another tower, you know, somebody complained. But I'm absolutely positive that people drive around our county all the time and don't know where towers are because they don't even see them anymore. It is a ubiquitous part of our universe that towers are important. The 350s will certainly be seen more than a monopole, than a 200-foot monopole, but where they are, especially the one up by the lake, will be in a heavily treed area. And the one at the landfill, while you'll be able to see it coming either way from Route 6, because Route 6 is relatively flat through that area, they will give us dramatically better coverage as well as the opportunity for revenue on those to provide commercial providers to provide underserved areas of our county in the southern area. The Lake Monticello one will give carriers will still want to go on that one because they're on small towers now, but the coverage around the lake is in pretty good from a cell coverage point of view.
That's kind of,
you're going to have to make a decision on whether or not you think this kind of coverage, look at the blue map on the right, that kind of outside coverage is appropriate for our county for radio systems, for emergency communications, and whether it's worth it to take the trade-off of going to a 350-foot lattice tower.
And you can't go shorter around the lake. I mean, I think I would anticipate a fairly substantial amount of people showing up to complain about that.
We ran that to do some testing, and it's not, they need to be tall. We need something taller. So if you have to go short around the lake, we'd have to go back and get the Carter's Mountain one, because it needs the height to be able to get in over the terrain.
That increases the expense long term too, because of the building facility and the rental and stuff on there.
Now, for years, we're only allowed to, if you are coming from private business, you can have a 125-foot tower, correct?
No, 200. 200.
I mean, anything under 200 is what our rules have set in 2011.
Used to be 125.
Right.
Okay, now it's 195. And if the county is going to allow itself, grant it permission to go to 300, 350, 400 feet, but no one else can do that, and then, you know, you're really unfairly, you're not even competing with the open market. You're just saying, good to be the king.
Exactly. Because
exactly.
That's what, and there are a number of counties that do that. They built the tall towers, which guarantees them additional revenue to be able to offset the costs of it. And it also places the towers where you want them to be, rather than having commercial carriers come in and say, well, we want to build 10 350-foot towers around your county.
You can get commercial carriers to build on our landfill. They wanted to go both sides of that, but they wouldn't build on landfill. Our own property.
Well, I have a problem with competing unfairly with open market. And, you know, if Verizon can only have a certain tower and the county can have 350, of course you're going to get the leases from other towers.
Take the other side as well, though.
I understand that you need the money, that the county needs the money, but is that what America's about?
Well, I think when it comes to public safety, it changes, and I think that, quite frankly, it's disturbing to me that these private carrier companies charge fees ranging from $1,800 to $5,000 a month for public safety. They reap their own problems from that standpoint, because they create an incentive for the county to build counties, not necessarily our county.
Well,
to
it
build
doesn't
their, I appreciate what you're saying. I'm just saying that I feel like when you're talking about public safety, that the tower company should be giving a much, much better pricing than what appears to be almost.
The part of the problem is from their perspective, to give them a little bit of defense, when they build the 200-foot tower.
That's all they could build.
Well, I know, but when they build the 200-foot tower, our equipment that we need for public safety is big and heavy, and we need a lot of space, maybe two 10-foot sections. But if you take up two 10-foot sections right at the top of the tower, now you're down to 165 or 175 feet, and so you're decreasing coverage for those commercial carriers that go on there. And I can assure you that there aren't too many cell tower builders at this time that are clamoring to get in our door to build big towers. Now, it's not that they couldn't, but you'd have to then, you know, put the word out that we're willing to take really kind of any size tower and see where the chips would happen. But in the meantime, you're not going to have a public safety system.
So why does the public safety, do they have to have 350 or 400 feet to cover the county?
No,
coverage,
that's,
yes.
For this coverage, in the original plan, this plan right here, these towers, because the RFP went out and said, we want you to build a system using the existing towers
as
or the tower as much as possible, and using the tower, these are the towers that we're aware of that are either on the books to be built or that are planning to be built. Like the VFW one is not built, and they will build that once we sign a lease. They will build the tower. There are no other carriers on that. The Cohasset Tower right now is built. There are no carriers on it, but they say they have three, and that we can come on it, but below 160 feet, which doesn't work for where we need, and we also need 60 feet of the tower. So if that particular one is a problem. Over the years, earlier there is a tower that was just went through the Planning Commission or is in, earlier on Bryant's Ford that is a 125-foot tower. In that original SUP, it gave the board, it gave FluVanna free access to space on the tower and free ground space. And that was 2007, 2009, sometime in that period.
What good are they going to do us space on a 125-foot
right.
tower?
But to now,
in a hilly county.
But now, the conditions on the Cohasset Tower or in the 5280 towers that just went in, it's we have first right of refusal. So that has really hurt us in negotiating times because as first right of refusal, we do you want to come on our tower or not? Well, yes, we would like to. Thank you very much. Well, where would you like to go? Well, we'd like to be at the top. No, I don't think you can. You can be below 160 feet. That's first right of refusal. So I think even with our shorter towers of upping the conditions that so that we do have a little more negotiations could have really helped us in this process. But because of and this system works great, and we are ecstatic about that kind of coverage that would be in the county with the original plan. But when we looked at the lease costs, that's when you said, let's look at what other options that we have.
I believe Cars Mountain was the most expensive of these costs.
Yes, but we have some negotiated pricing too, which we'll show you a little bit more. So which might make the decision a little bit harder to make with this. So the design is still seven sites. They are all within the county, so we would not be relying on the Carter's Mountain one to get in. Get the coverage in our site, and it would mean the two towers at 350 feet, and then the other ones, the sheriff's office 601 and 656, are 200 feet. This one, of course, is the 400 will be 400. And at Brimo, and then we have the VFW one at 200 feet. Now. We have some alternatives, right? But they are willing. It should be able to be done in a timely fashion once we say yes. We
There's
will.
A landfill one in the middle.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Red right bottom center.
It's right across. I think Mrs. Booker's house is like right here.
Yeah, I'm right there. It falls on my house. It's so big.
It won't reach your house, but positive.
You're a long ways off.
We'll put some broadband wireless thing up on there so you can
get internet. And I can take the satellite photo off of my house.
Now, if we climb the tower, we might be able to look in your windows.
Uh-oh. All right. Now, talking about the VFW site, we do have some options for this corner of the county. And what I have here is this is the VFW site, and these are the maps for the portable and mobile outside, you know, carrying them portable around, so you can see the buffer around the county line. And again, the red dots mean better coverage than the original plan. Clear areas mean that it's just less than 95% guarantee. So this is the VFW site with the site there being right there. Another option, we have an antenna on the Scottsville water tower. This is a 100-foot water tower, and we do have an antenna on there that makes a little bit of difference in the current system. There is also a 355-foot tower in this horseshoe bend that is a U.S. singular, U.S. cellular tower, I believe. Yes. We haven't talked with them, but there could be a possibility that we could rent space on that tower.
But we don't need that.
We need something in this corner. So we need to do one of the three.
But the VFW is not built. The water tower and the 350 already are. The water tower is only in 100, but because it's elevation down there, it's been some coverage. But you can see on that center map, it's less coverage using the water tower than it would be the existing 350 that's that U.S.
We're on the water tower now.
We are.
Correct.
It's just a repeater.
It's just an antenna. So
can
we see
put
the antenna.
On it then? Maybe.
But look, Mr. Weaver, look at the middle drawing. And look at the coverage. See the white?
Yes.
There's less coverage on that one than there is using the one to the right. Because I'll see the red fill-ins along there.
Sure.
It gives us better coverage along the river where there's a lot of tourists.
I've been down there with my pager, right, Mr. Weaver.
I know all about that.
And it's scattered coverage if I'm in town with the water tower.
Now, the water tower is owned. Albemarle Public Safety used to have an antenna on that tower, and they do not any longer. They don't have it on there. And the water tower has been given to the Albemarle Water Authority. And we worked last year to get our antenna had been taken down for maintenance of the tower, and we worked last year to get it back up temporarily because we knew we were most likely going to do something different. Now, depending on whether this, because of having all of the towers within the county, right now the VFW site, I don't know if you recall from the pictures before, the VFW site is a spur. You have the circle, you have the loop of coverage with the VFW is a spur with a repeater, or a backup radio, basically, in it. I don't know at this point whether the new system is a loop or whether the VFW is still a spur. It had to be a spur because it couldn't see Carter's Mountain directly. It had to get the signal from someplace else, so it couldn't complete the loop. If this new system is a loop, then that water tower would have to hold one antenna and 2 6-foot microwave dishes. And I'm not sure that the water tower can hold 2 6-foot water dishes, microwave dishes. Now, they tell me that they would be mounted on an arm out, and so that you can walk behind them, and they're very much protected from the RF frequencies on the back of those things. But I would not want to be walking around the microwave dishes. I mean, the antennas are one thing, but the microwave dishes are not that people-friendly. So,
ready for frozen TV dinner.
So that is something that we don't exactly know with these options about how much of an option the water tower would be. But it's worth discussing with them to see whether that could be a possibility. Now, we know the VFW will work, and we know that we have the good coverage along the in this area, the hardware area, that we really have very poor coverage at this point.
But
both of these would work.
I have the negotiating leeway to know that I've got that 350 U.S. cellular tower ready to go, and I can get on there because VFW is not even built, and why even go that way if we've already got another alternative? But I'd like to have more than one alternative in our pocket before we start talking to people. But you'll need one of those sites in the southwest portion of the county.
So evidently, VFW has heard something about they may not get their tower?
No, Well, I mean, we haven't.
All to say was it, you know.
Oh.
I know they've been checking.
Somebody.
They've been checking periodically.
As far as I know, it's still there. Mm-hmm. Don't y'all make me into one.
The county of Savannah has not taken any action to not let that tower be built.
Okay.
But the county of Savannah doesn't necessarily need anything on that tower because it's never even been considered until just the last, you know, year. When it was first proposed, we hadn't even considered using that site for anything. Mm-hmm. But the builder of that tower is going to have to sooner or later get off the hump and do something. Otherwise, we'll pull the permit. Because if we're not going to let them just sit there and do nothing. Right.
Okay. So if we move ahead with this new plan, this is what it would entail. The sheriff's office tower would remain the 200 feet, and there's no change in it. The infrastructure cost is included in the contract, and the revenue. I have updated some of the costs here. What I have based the revenue is based on $200,000 a month per carrier with two carriers on the sheriff's tower and three each on the tall towers. Now, your ordinance asks for the towers to allow for six cell arrays on a tower, which we would not want six coming on this, and I'm not sure we could find six different carriers to come on that tower. So I think two is a good estimate, and we're using $2,000 a month because that's what we're currently receiving on the water tower, in the BRIMO water tower, and also on the Palmyra tower that we do have carriers on them. So then the BRIMO tower will be relocated, and the height increased to 400. And there's no infrastructure cost difference for us in there, and there will be and on the structure itself there's no charge for lease, but there would be some electric utilities and things like that in that, and we don't share revenue with them. Then on the two 5280 towers, that's the 601 in Kent Store and the 656 on BRIMO Road, and the VFW or the other options, which would be, you know, the water tower, the Woodburn Road one, or if you would say we want you to build a 200-foot tower on the VFW area and it's county-owned, that would also be an option. Annual costs, this is primarily the lighting, because what we're recommending on all of these is the microwave dish would go on the tower, but the receive antennas would go on top, and then the towers would be lit. Because in doing that, you're basically using space that the tower company cannot use or sell. So there's no charge for us being up there. We would only pay for the section of tower where the microwave dish is. And on the receive and transmit sites, you have a 20-foot antenna that has to be on the tower because they have to be down low. So it means using more space on the tower for those receive sites. So we're recommending that we put the receive antennas up on top and light those.
Those are the omnidirectionals. You're talking about the poles is what you're talking about.
Yes, they're like 3-inch diameters and they're 20 feet. There are a couple of sites that we could use a 12-foot antenna that's a little more directional rather than the omnis. Some of the sites can't use them because of the terrain. But it just means on the tower itself, you'd use 12 feet of space rather than 20 feet.
And those are microwave omnidirectionals, or they're
The antenna. Well, you have two different antenna. I mean, you have the microwave dish that is actually an antenna too, but then you also have the RF antennas that are the receive and transmit. The RF, they're RF antennas.
Radio frequency.
Yeah. And then. Then it would be to build two county-owned towers near Lake on the west side of Lake Monticello, perhaps on Lake Monticello Road and 53 in that quarter up in that area, and then also at the landfill. Infrastructure cost of building the towers, there's a couple of ways that we could infrastructure costs. What we're Let me see here. Wait a second here.
You could either have Motorola build them, because we can include that with contract costs because they're already building a tower. Depends on what their costs are going to be. Or you can compete it out on an RFP. But depending on cost, it may be simpler to use Motorola as the prime because they'll sub-build them. But because we already have a contract with them, if the costs were reasonable, it saves the time they have to go back out on an RFP for it. But only if the cost would be reasonable compared to what we think we can get them done otherwise.
And we think the 200-foot towers, the one at the sheriff's office, is cost in the contract is
147,140,000.
But it's not proportionate to do you know per foot charge and then go up to a 350 because it means a bigger foundation. It may mean a deeper, maybe pylons versus a platform kind of thing, and you have a lot more steel because of the structural integrity of the tower. So we would obviously need pricing on that. And then there would also be either a land lease or a purchase near Lake Monticello that would be involved in this. And then potential revenue, we figured three carriers on the tall towers each at $2,000 a month. All right, now for the eye chart.
Let's
go back.
Before we look at cost, let me just go back to here. So this is a pretty important philosophical discussion, because there's not much sense in us going down too many of these roads and spending time doing too much analysis and costing out and stuff if the board's will is not to build a tower or two or three. So I need to kind of understand what the board wants to do in that. We can show you the cost of the various alternatives, but what do we want to do?
And also, the reason that we're bringing this now, too, is we are really at a place where we need to know which direction to go, because we can't lease frequencies until we know exactly where the sites are. And so it's kind of a chicken and egg kind of situation. And if we're going to meet the schedule to be able to have the new radio system in place in the fall, we really need to stay on the stick. The frequencies and the tower constructions and getting the towers all, the leases and negotiating all of that or building towers is what typically takes a long time in these projects. And I know Motorola has seen that extend projects by years because of trying to get those two things in place. With the decision of going forward now, whichever way you would decide, we still feel we have time that we can crack the whip to be able to get things in place that we could, because this new system will be side by side the existing system. So we have talked with Motorola too about if we get everything in place and that we can actually use the system, but all that's left is the coverage testing. The coverage testing has to be done with the leaves on. It has to be worst case scenario, because it does get blocked by, you know, the signal gets blocked by the leaves. That is scheduled right now to happen at the very latest, the end of September into the first week of October. If we don't have all the towers in place by that time, we can't do the coverage testing. But we can still make the switch over to the new system and use the system. The warranties would kick in, because when you start using it, the warranties, but we have to pay 6 months of warranty use for a system that we can use is great. And then we would do final coverage testing in the spring when the leaves come on board.
17. Can you explain a little bit more about leasing the frequencies? What, in other words, you said you can't figure out whether you can lease the frequencies until you know where the sites are. Is that because you don't know which frequencies are available based on?
Correct. It's based on where the sites are and how far the frequencies travel and whether there's interference. So, for example, if we put everything in Fluvanna, it's more likely that those frequencies will be allowed than if we are up with all of the congestion up on Carter's Mountain, where there's a lot of frequencies and up in that area.
And are both closed and public frequencies part of the antennas design, especially on the receive antennas?
I think it's all in the, I don't know that they're necessarily mixed. I know that the cell phone carrier's frequencies are very different from what we have. It's the VHF frequencies that we're using. Mm-hmm. in this. That answers.
Yeah, I would do, if you're putting some receive antennas on top, if you had different frequencies, and depending if they were public, you might be able to use those for your broadband initiative. I don't know that that applies or not, but that's just that's a possibility.
Highly unlikely that the microwave dishes for the public safety system could also be used for public broadband. From what the engineers are talking about, that what may be important is where we want to put fiber from tower to tower, if we've got some tower spaces, or where we've got space on a tower to be able to put commercial providers both. But I'm not sure that we've heard of any way that you can share the public safety microwave dishes for any kind
mostly
of
the receive place. Antennas is what I was talking about, and in most cases, if you were going to do that, you would probably use smaller microwave ones to be able to go from one tower to another tower without having to bring fiber to each location.
Yeah, we're hoping not to have to put fiber down, just because that's why some of the towers are higher, because you've got good line of sight for the microwave. But
the location of the one thing, the one benefit would be the location of the two towers that are larger, would lend themselves for broadband purposes because they have higher density markets around them, at least as an initiative to get a number of carriers interested in doing that, because density is going to be a major issue. You have to have a certain amount of density in order to make it reasonable for them to invest.
One of them will have density.
But make it reasonable, or give
Scottsville
them
has some density
cheap space.
Certainly the lake has density.
So. That's part of what Louisa has done, is they're building towers so they can provide cheap space for commercial providers on their towers. So they're providing the platform, but gives the commercial carriers a lower cost to be able to place their gear, even though it's a low density area, is what their hope is. That's why they're doing the broadband that way, the 10 tower.
But I don't think the frequencies are normally shared, especially for public safety.
Not the frequency being shared, but the antennas themselves can handle multiple frequencies. So sometimes you can have an antenna.
Yeah, if you have the radio connection to it.
I was referring more to the omnidirectionals than anything else. So it's just a question to ask them and see if that's a possibility.
I can ask that.
All right. Now, I think y'all were asking for the actual numbers before you try to tell them.
Okay. Right.
Just so that will be part of the decision-making process.
Okay. So this chart, you've seen parts of this and have updated it. This is from the January 6th presentation. The original design with as is, and the operating costs here across the board, I have updated the lease costs per month. And what's interesting is we haven't heard from all of them, but the 5280 sites and the VFW site and the Verizon site on Carter's Mountain all have come down significantly below what we were anticipating. These lease costs represent the new negotiated amounts on that. So annual operating costs, we also added in fuel maintenance, lighting, the lighting maintenance would kick in on some on these additional options here where they're lit. And I increased this 350 because I'm not sure whether the lighting may be different. It will be different on the 350s as it would be on a 200. And the FAA determines that. You do an application saying, we would like to build this height of a tower here. And they say, yep, okay, and you need this kind of light bulb. So there may be a little bit additional expense and maintenance of that. Current revenue projections, like I said before, we used the $2,000 per carrier per month, and the $48,000 is based on carriers on the Sheriff's Office one, and then these would be on the new Sheriff's Office in addition to the new towers that these options had considered. Let's see. Construction costs, the 10-year revenue predictions here to also look at years 1 to 5 being the annual cost, and then years 6 to 10, we added the 3% increase. Now, there would be there would be potentially more increases, but we're talking about when you're leasing space, you're talking about in perpetuity, and that those numbers would go up. And then let me talk a little bit about the construction costs.
Hold on, back up on the 10-year revenue. Not only do they have flat costs, these 331 times 5 years, first 5 years, then 331 plus up 3% each year for the next 5 years. So you've got a little inflation factor built in there. But we also backed out the first year's revenue, new revenue on each one of those to be a little bit more conservative, because it's doubtful that we're going to have a carrier on there the day the tower goes up. So we pulled the 48 and 144 and 192 out of there for the first year in each one of these in the 10-year net revenue cost.
So the current annual revenue is for the Sheriff's Tower, and that's with two carriers that we have. Is that correct?
Annual revenue is the Palmyra Tower, and that we do have additional revenue, another $40,000 about, that's from the BRIMO Water Tower, but that money is dedicated to FUSD.
Okay, and so the $48,000 of projected
is on the Sheriff's Tower,
and that's and is that something that's in the works, or I mean, is that just no?
That's projected. We have had some conversations, but that hasn't been top of priority to secure carriers at this point. But it is.
Carriers often flock to wherever you build the tower if they if they have need for the tower, or if they know, secondly, that the costs are low. And in our case, we just got to get over the hump and get that tower built. Regardless of whether we do anything else, we've got to get it built, because that's the backbone of the whole system. So,
and we're also, with that tower too, we are planning to have that two carriers could go on it. As far as looking at the limiting factor, even for the 350s, is the ground space and how we do the ground space. A lot of the carriers are using the outdoor cabinets, and so instead of putting a 12 by 16 building in, they're using cabinets that they can access a little bit easier, so it takes up a 3 by 3 pad versus or a 4 by 4 foot pad rather than a 12 by 16 building to do that. But for public safety, we have more than one rack that would need more space.
We want it more hardened so that it's more
correct,
safe and secure.
Correct. Now, of these, we have I've updated the leasing prices to on average of $1,500 per tower section. And remember, the tower, it's more than just one tower section, depending on whether it's a transmit or and receive site. The range was $1,800 to $4,700 is what we were looking at. And that's about a range that's current. I know Amherst County, I believe, is paying $4,500 or $4,700 a section on one of the towers that they're on. So, I mean, these are all, they were not just guesses. And so I feel very good about getting the pricing down. But again, those prices will go up over time in perpetuity. Most likely, again, we talked about the taller towers are more attractive to carriers than the 200 foot, than the shorter ones. The 200 foot towers in options 4 and 5, these were based on the tower, the suggestions in here, these were looking at 200 foot towers, and we used a ROM of about $200,000 a piece to build for pricing for those towers, which would include foundation, ground, installation, and all that, those kinds of costs. And we're using the estimate that I've heard is between $300,000 and $400,000 for a 350 foot tower, and we use $350,000 as a ROM pricing. And before we would, the next step in that would be getting better pricing. Like Mr. Nichols said, we would have an option of amending the contract, But Motorola is also not in the business of building towers. They do radio systems. So we would get a better price if we went out for a bid. And I believe it would be an invitation for bid, which means that we would take the lowest bidder for the tower. But we can very much specify exactly what we need and also specify timelines that the bidder would need to meet in that.
It's just quick math on this, because I think it's easy to kind of look at the bottom numbers, but I mean, you can take 1, 2, and 3, particularly 1 and 2, out of the equation right off the bat. Even if you look at the new annual revenue projections, which I think maybe are aggressive, maybe not, but even if you took those and cut those off, just to make the math easy, by $100,000, especially on the ones that are $144,000, times 10, that's $1 million. So if you take your 2, number 4, and number 5, and even number 6, and add $1 million onto it, you're still at or below 1, 2, and 3, and you own the infrastructure. So it seems to me that we're really talking about using 4, 5, or 6, and we should scrap 1, 2, and 3. So,
well, that's a philosophical.
Question, right. Yes. Yeah. But I'm saying that if you're looking at costs,
really, from a money point of view, 4, 5, and 6 seem to be better.
Right, but I'm just highlighting the fact that even taking out what would be maybe aggressive projections, if you had the spreadsheet, you could pull it up. But just to make the math easy, as I said, you could essentially take out $100,000 on that number, and the numbers would still work in our favor.
Well, did you say 3 and 2 were 200 feet, or 3 and 4?
4 and 5 are built.
Number 6 is the tall ones.
4 and 5 are 200 feet. So they would have to have a light also, right?
Yes.
So.
And the lighting is included.
Lighting maintenance. Okay.
Because in order to get away from number 1, you have to light the towers.
Remember, here's a 200-foot tower, $199. So $199 or less, you don't require a light on top. Mm-hmm. But the $199 towers don't give you a lot of height, because they want to put the commercial owners of the towers want to put commercial carriers up there. They don't necessarily want to give us the 30 or 40-foot space we want if it's a transmit and receive. But if we put our transmit antennas on top of the antenna, so now we're above here, that has to be lit. But it doesn't take away any commercial space for them. They can't use this anyway, the free space up there. So we're adding essentially a 10-foot or more section to the top of the tower, lighting it so that we don't have to take up all the space down there. And that's why you would want to go to lighted towers, just so you can get usable space instead of being far down.
Some counties are also going to a point of designing, when a carrier comes in and wants to build a tower, they say, no, you have to build it. It has to only be 200 feet, but it's the bottom 200 feet of a 350-foot tower. So it's basically you're building the infrastructure for a tall tower and capping it, so that if the county would want to go in later and add the rest of the tower, the infrastructure is there already. Carriers don't really like that, because that's a whole lot beefier to do it. But there's some options.
Right. Than they would to build a 195 monopole.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And also for Mrs. Eager, since you weren't here with a lot of the discussion, the sheriff's tower is a lattice. It's a self-supporting lattice tower with legs rather than a monopole. And the reason for that is that the sheriff's site is the prime site and needs to have has to be able to see all the other sites. And monopoles go like this in the wind, and especially if you're putting a 6-foot round sail up on the top of it, they can really go like this. Yeah. And they can miss, the signal can actually miss each other. So your prime site especially has to be very, very stable, and that's the reason for the self-support lattice versus a monopole. And then the 350-foot towers would also be self-support, so they're not guide-wired ones, which would take up a lot of real estate. They are more of self-support, but they are lattice. And as you saw with the photosims, the photos that we showed you of the tower here at the sheriff's office, you can see right through it. And it starts out shiny guardrail, color and then fades to that real, you know, like, well, guardrails. It's not shiny anymore. So, and this tower is below the horizon. So up by Judge Talley's house, you can see it at Judge Talley's house, but if you go up to his son's house and look down, it's actually in the tree line underneath the horizon that you don't even see it. Okay. So.
Okay. Any other questions?
I guess the important philosophical discussion comes now.
Yes.
Because you got to get us over the hump.
Okay.
All right.
So what I would like to take away from this evening is concurrence from the board to change the design plan, or which design plan should we move forward? Because it really depends. It will determine how fast we can complete this project. And we can give you examples of every day of radios not working, putting lives in danger. I mean, we can give you Mike can probably tell you some of those kinds of stories. And we don't want to delay this process any more than what we need, and we can keep it on track. So we do need, I would love to have concurrence of a direction, you know, of whether you want to proceed with the 350-foot towers, whether, you know, and also with the VFW option, if you, we can look at the other tower in Buckingham and what that lease costs, and hopefully get it at the same rate of what we're working on with the other ones. And then in the future, if you give me that direction, in the future then we will need board approval for additional things along every step along the way, whether we lease or purchase land near Lake Monticello, the board approval to do the towers. I understand this would not need to go through the Planning Commission in the same way. It doesn't require an SUP because it is a county project, but there would still be the courtesy of going. We would talk with the Planning Commission on this, and they're planning to take the sheriff's site in the next little bit. We're still submitting all of the site plans and all of the steps that go along the way in it. So there's none of that is missed. It's not nothing is being done that wouldn't be up to code in that way. We would need to modify the Motorola contract or award a new contract to a third party. We would need to modify, I would suggest that we modify the Motorola contract to allow for construction management to continue on the Motorola contract, because they're already doing that with Mr. Kirk, and he's somebody that I really trust. Otherwise, I'm going to have to learn a little more about construction management, which I can do it.
So there
are some things there that we would, there would be some contract paperwork that would obviously come to you for approval. And then other actions, we would add the whole development of these new sites to the project management timelines, and to figure out, to make sure that we can stay on the timeline. And the team will tell you that I've been pretty in trying to get, well, why can't we do that yesterday? So, but we getting timelines so that we can make sure that we can keep things on schedule. But it would allow us to go ahead and apply for the permits that are needed for the towers themselves, and also to proceed with the licensing, because the licensing of the frequencies can take 3 to 6 months. And again, it needs to be, they are tied to the site, to the locations. And only one of our current frequencies will work. So, and we need six. So there's a pool of frequencies that we have access to. So the team is fairly confident that we'll have what we need for those frequencies. We currently have four, and two of them, there's so much interference that they're not usable. One of them is the fire rescue frequencies, and the other is the sheriff's frequencies. So basically, we're operating on two frequencies, which is just not a good thing.
Okay.
So your guidance is much appreciated, or marching orders, I should say.
Okay. Who has anything comment-wise?
I think we, you know, we need to move forward. We've come this far. And well, I, you know, I've sat and listened to the TAO discussions when we were talking about them, like we talked before, 125, and people, you know, were saying we can't do anything. And then all of a sudden, everybody wanted to go to 195. So I think that if the 350 TAOs are what we need, two of them, in order to make this work, I don't have a problem with a 350-foot TAO. I don't have a problem with them with lights on them, anything else, because after a while, you don't even see them. You don't even pay any attention to them. And it's important that we have our safety people being able to keep us safe, and we've gone too long with the kind of system that we've had. We've been pretty lucky that we haven't had some real catastrophes to happen.
We've had some accidents. We've had deputies facing suicide, potential suicides with weapons and not being able to get back.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We've had,
well, there's no, yeah. We're moving forward. We've already done that. Again, I think you can literally strike 1, 2, and 3 right out. Doesn't just take those off the table. So, I mean, the county should build towers. The question is whether you're building 2, 3, or 2 350-foot towers. I think the math is pretty much the same on most of them. I would suspect a fair amount of resistance to the 350 towers around the lake. However, if that's couched around the ability to bring in some broadband options, that would maybe lessen that. Certainly, you know, there's enough people that are would like to have options for carrier choices in that area. And putting a 350-foot tower there would provide the opportunities for a lot of the surrounding and a lot of the lake folks to have sort of a wireless ISP over there if they want to do that. Otherwise, I think you would get a fair amount of resistance. I think the numbers, you know, when you look at the new annual revenue numbers, as I said, even if you reduce those by $100,000, you're still ahead, more or less, of number three, which was the one that had a net annual cost of $1 million. Or a net 10-year revenue cost of $1 million, you're going to be pretty much in the same proximity as that mathematically. So I would question maybe the fuel and maintenance cost of the own towers. I don't know if that includes contracted maintenance for the towers themselves. I don't know if that includes any kind of depreciation as the towers age or any replacement costs. So I would question whether that's sufficient from that standpoint, and other than that, those are my main looking at the numbers.
These numbers do not include tower depreciation. That is one thing that we didn't.
What is the estimated lifeline of them?
Well, I think the BRIMO one that they're getting ready to replace was built in 73.
So 34 years.
That's that Dominion.
So as long as you're and you know, more than likely you're going to see in a 10-year time frame, whether we're hitting $144,000, $192,000, or hitting $44,000, as I said, it's still better than that over a 40-year lifetime.
Or if new technology comes and makes towers obsolete.
Yeah, maybe, but I don't anticipate that. I would say more technology makes the towers more necessary. New technology makes the towers more necessary. I think that in a 30-year lifetime frame, even with the numbers being lower, you would be able to build enough revenue to incorporate your replacement costs from that standpoint. So,
I think the only thing with the 350 tower that's going to would be at the landfill, there's no real guarantee that it's going to help the cell phones and internet things on that end of the county. It's like a maybe.
Is that 350 tower at the landfill?
Yeah.
That's what we'd be putting there if option okay. 6. The key to that one is that we'll have to ask our attorney's office on what's legal, but think of it from this way. we want stuff in certain areas, and one of the things we want in that area is cellular service because it's an underserved area. So can we give a greatly discounted rate for a cell carrier to be on that tower because it's to the best advantage of our citizens? And while we would maybe charge, let's say, $1,000 for an antenna there, and at the lake we'd charge maybe, you know, $2,500 for an antenna, just because you've got a population base there. As long as we're below the market rates, and especially in underserved areas, significantly below the market rates, it's not to undercut commercial business, private business, because that truly, to my view, is an important aspect of our economy. But when the private market cannot or will not work in the area where the needs are because of the underserved nature and because of the lack
sparsely
of viability
in those areas.
It's just not very, very viable.
Sure.
The government benefit, we're building this tower not for revenue, we're building this tower for public safety. If by chance you also have the side benefit of being able to provide cheap space for providers who would not have put an antenna on those towers otherwise. Cohasset Tower's been built for 2 or 3 years now, and there's nothing on it yet.
And there's also
three sites up and down, right?
Yes.
And they none of them. One was the Charlie Kids and Verizon.
Right.
A whole bunch of them.
Yeah.
Right. But the population in there. And
none of them, when we were negotiating all those, when they wanted to build, none of them would be willing to build at the landfill. But the landfill is similar heights to those, but for us, it gives us a long stretch along that whole corridor. Right.
Yeah. Ms. Eager?
Yes.
I just heard from Mr. Weaver. What's your thought process?
It looks, from what you've presented us, that it's substantially cheaper to do these two towers. Is that correct?
In the long term.
We believe so because of the ability of serving public safety, of the ability to share with neighbors because they'll be big enough where we can do things for neighbors or connect with neighbors to be, because we get line of sight on microwaves. And on top of it, the sizing of these makes them much easier to provide space for other providers at a reasonable cost, especially in areas where they wouldn't normally do it. It seems to be more viable to do that for these two towers. The rest of them are all kind of commercial areas. We don't have a contract in hand. You know, and I don't know off the top of my head what the last time somebody built the 350 is, what the top cost was for a freestanding 350. But these are pretty close to ballpark for what our communications experts say. But there's no contracts in hand.
Let me make a comment that sort of follows up what Mr. Nichols said and addresses in part both Mr. O'Brien and Mrs. Eager's earlier comment. And that is, I think you need to perceive this the way it should be, is that this is a public safety project, period. The fact that you can obtain additional service for private carriers is beneficial to the public. And it's beneficial to the public in the sense that it provides the service where service is otherwise not available. So you're not really competing with the private sector, because the private sector has elected not to establish the service in a particular area. The potential for revenue from these towers, and particularly these very large towers, I think you necessarily should consider that to be incidental. It may indeed be highly beneficial, but I think Mrs. Eager put it really quite bluntly, and that is, you would certainly be criticized, and possibly you possibly might be successfully challenged on if you were to say, well, we'll build 350s, we can skim the cream off of everybody's communications, we'll put up our public service, public safety features, but we'll get all the revenue from that. If that were your approach, I think Mrs. Eager's comment is very apt.
If you were building your own public broadband system.
I think you would be subject to criticism for that, and you might very well get challenged on it, maybe successfully. So I think when you decide on these options, and I don't know anything about this. Don't want you to think I'm selecting one of these, because I'm certainly not. But as you look at this, I think you need to evaluate it from that perspective. First question is, what provides the most effective, efficient, and most effective public safety protection?
The
other things are necessarily incidental.
It depends. When you talk about public safety to me also means that I can use my telephone to call the police department or the rescue squad. All of it's public.
Now, I don't disagree with you on that, but that's a second level.
Yeah, you're not a cell provider, though. The county of Flavanna is not a cell provider, so we wouldn't be providing.
All right, guys. Mm-hmm. We've spent a lot of time discussing. I think I've heard the same thing from all four of y'all.
Let me put in one more perspective, though. If you want a commercial carrier to come in and propose, build, and own a 350-foot tower, if they give us the space we need for our public safety antennas, that'd be fantastic. Except where you're going to find somebody that's going to come in and build a 350-foot tower to give us free public safety space when they can't attract anybody to go on there because they're looking for market rates of things, and they're not getting market rates on the existing 200s. So for them to spend even more to invest in it is unlikely, and for them to build the tower just to give us free space for public safety is highly unlikely. So that's why we would propose building our tower and putting our thing down.
All right, Steve. Two more questions.
If you backed out everything, so that as if we were looking for no annual revenue, then where do I look for this for the cost? Is it the $801,000, or does that include
the one-time cost down at the bottom?
Take $144,000, multiply it by 10, you got $1.4 million.
Yeah, then take it
dollars
out, right?
Basically. So you've add taken the $1.4 million to the bottom line.
Taking out the $224,000,
except for the $192,000 one, right?
There. So say that again.
So we've got a right screen now there for you.
I just took all the revenues out.
Oh, okay.
So there's a $300,000 differential between number six.
And this is actually, where's my formula? Oh, shoot. It's actually probably incorrect. No, F12 is zero, so that's fine. So that's maybe a...
So makes clear that one and two is basically out of the question.
Still, yeah.
And then really, really three is more expensive than four and five, and makes six, you know, potentially more expensive than three. But the reality is, if you're going to lease space, you're going to lease that on a 350-foot tower. That's where, I mean, it, more likely, you're going to have more people interested. Let me rephrase.
Sure.
You're going to lease space anywhere, but you have a higher...
A, you've got a lot more space for them. Right. B, you've got a higher space for them, which is good for their
right.
Their,
and then B,
signals.
Given the lack of cell phone coverage around the lake, you're almost certainly going to have a carrier or two on there. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I think there, it's possible that some people may move off their existing small towers, because there's a bunch of small towers around the lake that would move to a 350. But because that affects the market a little bit, that may then bring the cost on those other smaller towers down a little bit so that other providers could move in, at least have a space in the area. But those are market forces that, again, to Mr.
That's Mr. not what. That's not why we're looking at the 350-foot
This is a public safety radio system.
Public safety radio system to make sure. Now, Ms. Seeger?
Yes, sir.
Do you have an opinion on which one?
Well, clearly it's the most economical, because you're going to not just do three towers, right? You're going to do more than that.
On this one? On six?
No. You have the smaller towers, but you also need the two big towers and you need four small towers, right?
No. Those are existing towers that are already built.
Right, but you need the tall towers.
Oh, you have to have seven towers in every one of these configurations. It's whether you use some existing towers. So in this version, we would build two 350s, build the 200 at the sheriff's office, which is already part of the contract. So that's three, and we use four existing towers someplace else to tie our system together. In the one here, it'd be one tower plus the sheriff's office?
No, it was two. It was actually the Cohasset and the VFW.
So it's three towers building total.
Yeah.
The sheriff's office tower plus two, again, smaller ones. And then this would be three to replace some of the commercial ones. So all the configurations, all three of these, count on seven towers. Mm-hmm. But the last one excludes having to use Carter's Mountain, which is, you know, way up on the hill, more signal problems. And while it's high, that's fantastic, there are some substantive issues trying to get space up there and get on the antennas, and then the relative cost of that.
Where is the highest point in Fulvan County?
Maybe where Panorama is?
Panorama.
Yeah. That's just
Miles
just
Jackson Road.
That way?
Yeah, I know where Panorama is.
Right a mile.
Yeah.
So the only other thing that I would consider looking at or question is, one is, are there, for financing purposes, favored rates for public safety projects? I don't know that they are. Maybe we have a more favored rate. And then second, if you're looking at a tower that has a 30 to 40 year life, considering lease costs would certainly change kind of those numbers in the first 10 years considerably as well too, versus having that, because you're taking that $800,000 or that $466,000 or $673,000 cost, and you're absorbing all of it in the first 10-year period to come out with your revenue figures, whereas if you actually did that through financing, you would have much lesser costs at that point in time. So I think, again, that just points out that, you know, you're looking at 6, 5, 4 for sure, and I would suggest that 6 is probably the most economical in the long run.
What about an extension on the loan from Motorola on that, since we already have the $7 million line of credit at that rate, and then you'd have the payback on the other side of it? Naturally, you know, it might be several years or so. But
you might be able to. They have something besides sevens, so theoretically, you might be able to renegotiate to make it a 10 and still keep it about the same level. But you're only talking. I mean, I know this is kind of silly to say, but you're only talking about $500,000-$700,000 now. I know that's not a lot of money to, you know, Donald Trump. It's a lot of money to us, but you've got the benefit of being able to pay cash for this this year if you want to do that without having to add any more financing. And
so
for
we
that
have
low,
cash to pay for this?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yes, well, you do. Let me, from the perspective of
we've got about nine million dollars.
Yeah, well, I don't mean you should just blow it on anything you want, but I mean what I'm talking about is this. The fund balance options, this sheet, you know, I've got a $750,000 wedge there. These things are things we think you're going to have to do this year. Okay, we just think they're probably going to be things you're going to pay for. Now, that may be overstated, that may be overstated, that's a little closer to real, and that may be overstated. But assuming that's what those cost, you'd be left with $8.1 million in your fund balance. And then there's a whole series of other things you may want to do through this year to use for fund balance.
Not to diminish, you know, additional debt loads, but if there are favorable rates and or grants that are associated to it, I think that's, given our continued low rate environment, if it's even lower than that, certainly one way.
Sure, I mean, I think we're at 2.65 on the current Motorola loan, 2.65%. I don't know if they would
get 2.65. We can trade off on some of those higher loans if they extend that.
Well,
for 10 years.
Remember, this year you've only got three debt service things you can pay off, and one
still
of them
the flexibility.
One of them's at 2.6, 2.9, and three, whatever they were. They're not very much, but you can only pay off about
3.65
or something.
Yeah. 2.6 is a lot better than 3.98.
Yeah.
Well, the 398, we only have a couple of years.
That's the one. Yeah, 2 years.
The problem is you just don't have much you can pay off right now except that. I mean, you could get this stuff paid off to 2.37. That would free up $481,000 in debt service and save you some interest over the next few years. But again, in this case, the relative low cost of a couple towers maybe something to want to do.
Think about it.
The key is we got to figure out what they're going to cost. So you got to decide whether you want to build them, not want to build them. We got to find out what Motorola will do, what commercial industry would do,
So I believe you have the overall consensus of the board to move forward on six.
Well, I believe so. What, Mr. Nichols? You getting ready to say something?
No, go ahead.
I
want to hear.
I think from what I've heard, we've had a consensus pretty much to say that six would be willing to look into that right now the most, and then possibly number four. But six, definitely look into, because that looks like it's going to save us the most. Now, having said that, the one thing I will say, you talk about the public safety. When you get from 640 to Route 6, right there at the landfill, you have no fire rescue service.
Absolutely.
My pager will not work from there until I get to within about a mile of Scottsville.
Scottsville Fire Department's going to be a heck of a lot happier, so is Scottsville
Rescue. Well, it's going to be a major benefit for that end of the county. But I'm going to be a little bit selfish now. I still worry about the lack of coverage. The major lacks in coverage will be in Kent Storm.
But what this means, though...
That's the new coverage map.
That's outside.
Outside,
that's inside,
right?
The county.
No.
But it's outside.
But if I'm inside of the building, then I'm still in
houses.
With them. That's the major.
But now, remember, this doesn't mean that you don't have any coverage. It just means it's not 95%.
I understand lack of coverage and hit and miss. And if I stand in my bathroom, I got better coverage. And if I'm sitting in my chair watching TV.
But we hope, because of and especially in these areas where there's less, where it looks like they're guaranteeing less than, that's where we'll concentrate on the coverage testing, too, and making sure that things... because the whole county, the whole county means 95.
We want to go ahead and look into the 350-foot towers.
Okay, and then do you have any preferences about the Scottsville area? As far as all three of them continue.
We don't have a choice on that. We need one of those sites. DFW, which is not built, and they've got us over a barrel potentially, and it hasn't even started. The big tower on the other side of the river in Buckingham County, or the water tower. I would say that the VFW and the big tower are probably our prime ones, but maybe we get free public safety space on that 350-foot tower. We don't know yet.
The thing about it with the landfill, that hasn't even been mentioned, but you take it for granted, that land's free. That belongs to us. It's not going to cost the same thing to find a site. Over there at the lake, we don't know how much it's going to cost.
Well, you're going to get by 2 acres or something like that.
Yeah, it might be higher when they find out that
I think the cost will be a little higher than for the land acquisition they projected there. But yeah. Well,
we put $25,000 in there for an acre.
Yeah.
And
it's not
technically,
in the lake proper, it's outside the lake.
And technically, we just need, for the compound, we would need 100 by 100 and access road. Is essentially, so you wouldn't even need an acre.
Even if it was $100,000,
a lot of stuff going with it.
Right,
$352,000 when you put it up. I mean, it's just more.
Well, you don't have to have fall zones where you're
350 feet. You can have the big ones.
You can do a lot of shopping.
We've got to identify the sites of suitable on there and find a willing,
willing
landowner. And I would prefer to purchase that piece of land rather than lease it, so I've got to have releasing it all the time. But we have some contacts, people have already offered, and we've got some other ideas on potential. But
yeah, I think we need to purchase it.
Alrighty.
I think so.
Thank you very much.
We're going to vigorously pursue number six, and the glitches along the way will keep you informed.
Yes.
As much for sure, brief, but the brilliant part was good.
She was brilliant.
Alrighty. Well, ladies and gentlemen, next up is the consent agenda, and I see Mr. Weaver's already turning through some Mr. Dollarlight advice.
Well, my, you put me on the spot.
No, sir, I am not. That's why you're here, to make sure Mr. Dollar's dotting his I's and crossing his T's.
Whenever you get done, Mr. Weaver's going to make the motion, and Mrs. Brooke is going to second, because we need that for the other resolution that we've already done.
Right. And while he's looking, I want to make sure I recognize those young people sitting right over there on the front row. And if what I was trying to tell y'all a few minutes ago, Mr. Brothmel, please don't make me throw the gavel. What I was trying to tell y'all is inside that basket that Mr. Brothmel's trying to hide are some of the best cookies you've ever eaten. So make sure you grab one or two. I made them. Mr. Weaver?
Yeah. Yes. On the consent agenda, naturally, we've already pulled P, those minutes. On Q, I just have a question on that. Sure. You don't need to necessarily pull it. But here we're putting $225,000 on that roundabout. But what about the other money that comes from Mr. Zeller? How does that fit in here?
That's designated that it doesn't come until he starts phase two of his project, and it would be $275,000. That's what the current written agreement says.
Okay.
So when he goes to phase two of his project that he submitted, then he would pay half of what we put in other words, $275,000.
Okay, I keep knowing that's hanging on there.
Yes, sir.
Okay, we go to
page.
Okay, line number 245.
Baycor. That's the.
That's the sheriff's volunteers accident policy.
What was that? I mean,
it's the policy.
It's the insurance policy.
Oh, it's the policy itself. Okay.
Yes,
yeah, not an accident itself.
Okay. Okay. Going to 300. Now, this is a little bit more complicated as far as I'm concerned. On 300, we have fuel costs of $1,440. What does that cover, or that's under animal control?
I can call Paul.
Maybe the generator for the SPCA or something. Like
no, the animal those costs don't come under animal control. That's a separate line. It's just their monthly vehicle fuel bill. I'm assuming
it can't be. It cannot be a monthly one. Okay. I can take. I'll demonstrate that to you.
We'll find out.
Well, Mr. Weaver, I'll find out and I'll email you.
Here's what I did though. The cost is $1,440. The fuel cost I figured at $2. Mm-hmm. Instead of a dollar and a half, I got gas for a dollar and a half just recently.
Right.
That comes out to 720 gallons. Then when you take 720 gallons, let's say you get 20 miles to the gallon. That's 14,400 miles in a month. That means that you're running 480 miles a day for 30 days. So
that doesn't necessarily mean vehicle fuel only. It could be oils, petroleum.
But that's the question.
A whole variety of things. Because remember, there are multiple lines there. We'll pull 300 and let you know.
How many trucks are there, just out of curiosity?
There's two vehicles for animal control.
Right now, I don't think they're using but one.
They upgraded the second one.
Because I know they're training. One officer's riding another officer. Right. Training the second one right now.
I'll get the answer for you, Mr. Rubin.
And how long ago was that for?
I'm not sure. I'll look at the bill itself.
I just want to know who let the dogs out. That's what I want.
Yeah, I had to chase them down. That's 12 hours a day in a car. In a vehicle. Time. What do you think of that?
You caught us.
The sheriff.
You caught us. We'll put the money back next month. Sorry.
What's that?
You caught us. We'll put the money back next month.
Okay. That's what I want to hear.
We're hoping to get it.
That's what I want to hear. Thank you for coming. Okay, let's go to 322.
Yes, sir.
Contract service, labor, plumbing. What is it? That's $5,000. What would that be?
Is that company three? No, he did a lot of work for us.
Wait, I don't know. That's the reason I'm asking.
Idea, Gary Osteen, $5,600.
Yeah, it's a whole long list of stuff that he worked on, but we can pull the list and give it to you. He's one of the contractors we use for plumbing services.
I know he came over because I let him in company three because he had to.
Yeah, well, I could have stopped that
situation.
Yeah, we'll that's definitely more than just one invoice.
But if it was $5,000 a month, you couldn't hire a plumber to replace that.
Some of the costs that I've seen to replace a hot water tank, wow.
But for $60,000 a year, you couldn't hire a plumber.
Well, we don't, we'll talk about that later.
You just couldn't with benefits.
Yeah, we'll see. Okay, you want me to make a motion or not?
Yes, sir. I would love to hear you make a motion.
Mike thought he was going to have it done in an hour and 5 minutes.
Enough.
And Cheryl walked up there.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve the consent agenda with, let's see, I've got to get that figure on it, with the accounts payable of $2,987,370.47.
Start in the motion.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Chair votes aye, 5-0.
What do you think of that?
Hey, Columbia, do we have to make a motion? Was that
unfinished business.
Business? All right, we're moving on to unfinished business. Any items on unfinished business before the board? Mr. Weaver, do we have a motion about
new business?
New business. Going to new business. Any items of new business before the board?
Comment.
We will now move to our second round of public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board should come to the podium and state their name and address. Please remember to keep your comments 5 minutes.
Come on, all five
on topic, and directed to the board. Come tell us about who your favorite teacher is.
In your class. Come on. Come on, come up here. What did you learn about cell tower?
Anyone?
They're expensive.
And both sides call that second round of public comment to a close.
I'd like to make a motion to adjourn.
Thanks a lot. So move. Second.
Now remember, next Wednesday, 6 o'clock regular work session with schools. And then 8
by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
6 o'clock.
Chair votes aye. Hallelujah. Pass ammunition. We're done till 6 next week.